Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Okay, hello and welcome to a very special edition of Lights, Camera, Barstool. If while you're asking yourself why is it special, you might be thinking, you know, hey, wait, I'm listening to this. I'm listening to this on a Spotify feed right now. I'm listening to this on an Apple Music feed right now. And that is because we have been given the green light to come back onto the podcast feeds, which is awesome. Some people have asked us and we've been pretty transparent about it. It's a lot of just like some money issues that go into that, like putting stuff on different podcast feeds. So we've been offline on YouTube for a long time, but now coming back to your podcast feeds. And there's also going to be a few more changes that come up in the future. So stay tuned for all of those.
Lots of exciting stuff. Yeah. I think people are going to be really excited, not only to have us back in the pod feeds, but new characters abound, a lot of different views coming into play. And I think there will be a lot more structure, at least yes. In terms of release schedule. We will be much more reliable.
Let's say at least the next month and change, you will be getting a podcast on the podcast feed every Tuesday. We will be recording Monday. But let's say I don't want to give you a countdown, like a timer or anything.
No.
But let's say after that, things will be shaken up a little bit and it'll be a little bit more set schedule for the much longer term future. So just get ready for that. We're excited to be back on the pod feeds after comments upon comments upon comments upon DMs upon DMs upon DMs of people yelling at us, why the fuck isn't it on the pod feed? Why the fuck isn't it on the pod feed? Guess what? Back on the pod feed.
Well, I'm going to say some things today about the Silver Surfer, which may get us
immediately
removed.
Canceled.
Immediately
canceled. But again, very excited to be back. But so let's jump straight into some news. But we'll also be doing, as we move on, a Fantastic Four review. We'll be doing a review, maybe a shorter one of Billy Madison, or not Billy Madison 2. I tried watching Billy Madison for 5 minutes. Now it's stuck in my head too. Happy Gilmore 2. And we'll be doing a combined rankings of late sequels in honor of Happy Gilmore 2. Because there actually is a way more of them than I thought there was. Like a lot more of like, and we're saying late sequel, like 10-ish plus years between releases. So not like T2 to Terminator where it was like a decent chunk, but like not really that long. A little bit further than that. And lastly, we also have a interview for, I think, our third interview with Paul Walter Hauser, which me and Gooch went out. Thank you to Paramount. They brought us out to go talk to him. It was awesome. As always, such a fun time. We did a little combined ranking with him as well about parody movies, which is very fun. And he was a delight as always.
Yeah, and not to spoil the interview, but we did get a major scoop about a Marvel movie, which he may or may not be in. Who knows?
He may or may not be in, and the embargo that we had on this interview may or might not have conflicted with the release timing of that Marvel picture. So just keep that in mind when we're talking about it. So at the time we were like, holy shit, big spoiler, we get to release nugget, we get to release like tomorrow. Not the case. We had to wait another week because there was a little bit of an embargo in the interview. But again, before we get to all that, let's just talk about some quick news. The Avatar trailer. Jake and Natiri's family grapple with their grief after Netanyahu's death. Encountering a new aggressive Na'vi tribe, the Ash people, who are led by the fiery Varang, as well as the conflict with Pandora, which escalates with a new moral focus emerges. It's all the same basic cast members as before. Big additions, I guess, being Una Chaplin, who you might know as Robb Stark's wife from Game of Thrones. I don't remember her name in Game of Thrones. I didn't want to do like the athlete's wife thing to her, but
yeah, no, I don't remember.
She was from like Volantis, so she had a goofier name, but I forget exactly what it was. And David Thewlis, who I love, one of my favorite actors. He's a
all-timer.
Yeah.
Remus.
Did you watch Fargo, his season of Fargo? It's so good.
No.
He's really fucking off-putting in that. Like, it's really gross. But yeah, so that's the big two additions. We went and saw the 3D trailer. Disney brought us to go watch like a big event thing. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Really, really cool watching that in 3D. The way Jim Cameron, and seemingly only Jim Cameron, wants people to watch movies.
Yeah, and they had like these very, which I hope this becomes a standy. I mean, the 3D glasses are constantly changing, but they had these like special 3D glasses.
They were sick.
They were, one, sick, but more importantly, comfortable.
Yes.
Which is always the biggest problem with the 3D glasses for
it's
me.
It's like pinching. Especially, yes. I have a fat ass head. Those things pinch.
You don't notice it at first, but then it's like 40 minutes in, you're like, why do the temples of my head hurt so bad? And you're like, oh yeah, it's because of these fucking glasses. But these were super comfortable. But the trailer, incredible. I mean, incredible. I want James Cameron to dunk Robbie Fox to the core of the earth.
Robbie was in the mud. The last few days.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, I get the critiques of the franchise. It is a very simple narrative, one that we're familiar with, the elements coming into play. But goddamn, does it just look beautiful. Just looks beautiful. Looks like a Ghibli movie come to life. I love the Sullys. They are my family. And the Ash people. It's just cool.
They look like cool.
Anytime you bring a fire tribe of any sort into the fold, they always are just the coolest people.
They look great. Great design on them. Like, I love that, I don't know, you call it like a brocade or something,
yes.
Whatever that thing is.
They're like the bones. Like, you see they're wearing like bones of other Na'vi.
Yeah.
They're crazy people.
It's fucking sick. And they're doing like kind of like a conquistador type thing where they're pitting the tribes against each other.
Yes.
The humans are. And I think, I forget if it was James Cameron or someone else recently said that, like, in one of the next few entries, I think he said maybe the next one, that they were going to be going back to Earth at some point.
Yes, which is crazy. I don't know how to feel about that, to be honest, because I love Pandora so much.
I want to see what the fuck is going on with Earth. I do want to see what's happening over
there.
Yeah,
but I don't need to be there. Just send me a little transmission.
Okay.
Like, give me a little, like, this is what the Earth actually looks like, and it's probably hell.
Yeah.
But I just love Pandora being there. Like, there's a reason why. What do they call it? Post Pandora syndrome, like the people who were becoming depressed because once they're leaving the theater because Pandora is so magical.
We're not going to Pandora anymore with that beautiful score playing and incredible visuals and all that. Yeah, dude, we actually were talking about this when we went to go see that screening, the Avatar 2 shirt I made.
Yeah.
So I wore that to, it was my batch party this previous weekend. I went to a shooting range and the fucking shooting instructors all were like, love that shirt. Love that shirt. I've never got more compliments than by shooting range instructors. Seemingly love Avatar. Is that a weird demographic to just be obsessed with that movie?
I'm like trying to find a rationale behind it. I mean,
no.
The gunplay, maybe. Like, there's
maybe
some militarized
it.
Stuff to it where like James Cameron's guns always look cool and his weapons always are just awesome. But like even then, it's like a kind of a super hippie left-leaning movie. Like it's an environmentalist like tale.
It was also a fake shirt, like it's
that
fucking
too.
Dr. Manhattan's new dong in like Paul Giamatti and Liar or a Big Fat Liar. Like, it's not really from the movie. They just loved it.
I'll try to think who else is on it. The Cookie Monster.
The Cookie Monster hats. They're all wearing Cookie Monster hats, and it's original Sonic as well. They they three different shooting instructors at that range all went up and were like, I love that shirt. Just for a bizarre interaction of people.
Just that's not the environment where I expect to find a cinephile. Those people are watching the movies Jeff watches, like the ones that just don't exist.
Yeah.
They're like, ah, look, Frank Grillo's in this movie straight to Tubi.
Yeah. Straight to Tubi. The Frank Grillo Chinese movies.
Yeah, like those. Those are the kind of movies the gun range people are watching.
Yeah, or Scott Adkins.
Yes,
they love Scott Adkins.
Oh my god!
And by the way, fired a saw there, like the big machine gun, fully automatic. That's one of the coolest things ever. That was so goddamn fun.
That's a lie. I haven't fired a gun in like 10 years, 15 years.
It's one of those things where I think, especially when you live in New York this long, you're just kind of like, guns? What do I need that for? And then you fire a gun, you're immediately like, holy shit, that's so fun.
They're pretty awesome.
Bumped up the 45, Colt 45, an AK, a Vector, which was sick. A couple other,
You're throwing out gun names I do not know, but AK.
You know Colt 45 and the 2.6X.
Yeah, I know those.
Yeah. You know AK?
I know AK. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uzi. Oh,
dude,
yeah.
Desert Eagle. That was insane.
That's the big gun, right?
That's humongous.
Big hand
cannon.
Big Glock.
Dude, that was crazy. That was like I was firing like something out of Fable or whatever. Like, you fired the gun and your whole face blasts back like a Looney Tunes cartoon. It was crazy. It's the most impractical weapon I think I've ever fired in my life. But yeah, anyway, that was gun talk. Anyway, Air Bud returns. Coming soon.
Wolf.
The film is written and directed by Robert Vince, and this is, I don't know if it's almost, I don't want to say sad, But he's produced Air Bud in 1997, along with the 14 films in the Air Bud, Air Buddies, and Santa Paws franchise. So this guy's only worked with dogs.
Wow. He's a dog whisperer.
I don't know if that's good or bad, though. Like, is that a good career or a bad career? Because working with dogs, no actor, you really don't have to deal with actors at all. You just work with dogs, make kids movies. That kind of seems like awesome in a way.
It does. And you know what?
Dude, this guy's having the best life of all time. I'm just looking at him now.
You don't see him, but he actually looks like a golden
I'm going to put him on screen for the video. He looks like a human golden retriever.
He does. Like that. That's really funny, the fact that the director is just a golden retriever.
He's a Canadian golden retriever. That is incredible.
That makes it even more golden retriever.
Yeah.
Just rolling over, showing his belly to everyone. This movie is going to stink. Like the director is. Mm-hmm. The first Air Bud, like we all liked it, but like. Everything that's come after was terrible, and just like, I mean, it's not a real franchise. I don't know how to react to this because it's not even like it's almost not a real franchise. The Air Bud franchise is like they're almost not real movies. But I do expect. I feel like this movie next summer is going to become a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way they dropped a trailer or a poster a year out, they're planning on this to be a big thing.
Mm-hmm. By the way, just to your point, almost the last six movies that he has made do not have. They're grayed out on Wikipedia.
Oh, so they actually don't exist.
From 2018 to 2015, Russell Madness, Monkey Up, Pup Star Better Together, Pup Star World Tour, Puppy Star Christmas.
Okay, I'm a little interested in this guy now. Does he have a certain qualification or a certain... There might be a certification that like a director has to have to work with dogs, like this many dogs on set.
Holy
shit.
I'm putting this on screen as well if you're watching YouTube. What is this?
Oh my god!
It's like a tiny Russell Wilson.
That's a Straw Hat Luffy on the right.
A Straw Hat Luffy monkey guy. The strongest tag team is family is the tagline with a Jack Russell Terrier, and
with
it says it's from
WrestleMania
Air Bud.
Logo on the top.
It
looks like it's like a ripoff of like a wrestling logo.
And then before that, he has Super Buddies, which is also dogs. Santa Paws 2, Treasure Buddies, Spooky Buddies, Search for Santa Paws, Santa Buddies, Space Buddies, Snow Buddies, Air Buddies, Chestnut, the hero of Central Park. MXP, Most Extreme Primate. I remember that.
Okay.
Yes. I remember Most Extreme Primate. Spy Mate, which is... No way this is real. With Emma Roberts? No fucking way. No fucking way this is real.
Oh my god.
No fucking way that's real.
Dude, that monkey is fucking swagged out.
Dude,
holy shit. He's got the literal, like, Soulja Boy YOLO sunglasses.
He has the fucking YOLO sunglasses. He's holding out, like, an FBI agent thing, or special agent thing, Spy Mate, instead of Primate. And he's got a fucking banana instead of a gun. And Emma Roberts is doing the classic Disney kids pose.
That actually looks pretty funny.
We got to watch this. We got to find a way to watch this. That's fucking crazy.
But the guy has to have like some sort of like degree in like directing animals.
It's Pat Morita's last movie. Like the fucking guy, like legend from Karate Kid.
Oh, Jesus.
It's Air Bud 7th Inning Stretch, MVP 2, Most Vertical Primate.
The only other one I remember is the football one.
Mm.
Which is
was
very funny to watch, like the golden retriever running slant routes.
Air Bud World Pup, also known as Air Bud 3. Oh, he didn't even do the original Air Bud.
Wait, what?
He came in on the third Air Bud.
Okay, what are we doing here? How are they make? I mean, like I said, it seems like they're positioning this as a big thing, a summer release, first poster a year out. That's usually a sign that they're gonna make it a thing. What are they doing bringing this guy in?
Air Bud 97.
They should have gotten Christopher Nolan.
He produced, I guess, the first one. That's starting to make a little more sense.
I don't know. I'll be there. That'll be fun. That's like one of those things, like, I guess for guys, it's like the flip side of like Freakier Friday this summer, where I think most women who are, I know, are very excited for that movie while also recognizing the fact that it's probably going to suck ass.
Yeah.
I think every man next summer is going to be like, Air Bud's going to suck. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah. But it'll be one where... There's going to be worse movies to go to your kid with, probably, that come out during the year.
Yeah.
Kids love dogs. Kids love animals. Do you remember Cats vs. Dogs?
Oh, yeah.
Cats vs. Dogs, The Rise of Kitty Galore.
I did not like that one, but the first one, pretty good.
And that was one where they actually had the dog's mouths moving, too, which is, like, always sketchy. I prefer the Homeward Bounds, where it's, like, you just kind of... They just talk.
Blanks.
Yeah, they talk without mouth moving. I kind of dig that instead. And that was, like... Who was the voice cast on? It was Michael J. Fox. It was, like, the main one. Who were the other two... people in Homeward Bound, because they were definitely also people with. Okay, Sally Field was the cat, and Don Amesh. I don't know the Hollywood history stuff. This guy looks kind of old-time famous, but yeah. Anyway, that's Air Bud. And then lastly, just quick news thing. We have new details on the live-action God of War series.
Oh, we do?
Yes. So season one is going to be 10 episodes. I like that. I've become not a fan of, like, here's just 6 episodes, 7 episodes of a first season, mm-hmm. and, like, we're going to give you as little as humanly possible. Maybe pump you up for season two, which is going to disappoint you. I don't like that. I kind of like getting a full length, and I'm assuming, okay, it's going to adapt the Norse era games and focus on Kratos and Atreus. It's going to be the game director is actively involved. Filming may begin in 2026 at the earliest. I like that. The God of War, both the last two reboot ones are awesome. Great games, great narratives, mm-hmm. which is awesome too. Like, kind of like the father-son stuff you might think is like played out. It's done so well in those games. They look beautiful. I'm always going to be hesitant of video game adaptations, especially in series now, especially after Halo, because mm-hmm. goddamn was Halo so bad. I'm going to check some of the writer stuff. But did you ever play the games?
I played a little bit of the fourth one that just came out a few years ago. Fourth one?
Was it also a Norse one, or was it?
Yes. It's the one where I think you start as his son.
Okay, that would be the second one, I believe. You start as his son, and then you transition back to him, if I remember correctly.
I don't know. It came with my PS5.
Yeah, so it was God of War. It was God of War. They just called it God of War, which is the first of the reboots in the Norse one, and then God of War Ragnarok, which is the second one.
I think that was it.
Yeah.
Ragnarok sounds right. It was fun, though. I only played, like, a few hours. Not really my type of game. But I do like the aesthetics. I really like the character designs. It's kind of hard to go wrong there. Who do they have playing?
I don't know that it is listed on there yet. But, I mean, the guy that plays Kratos is mocap for both of them. It was also... The kid who plays Atreus is... do you remember from mid-90s, like, the main kid from mid-90s?
Yeah.
He's the... It plays Atreus.
Oh, wow.
And it's all mocap and voice stuff. And I feel like the guy that plays him, I don't know if he could physically do a lot of that stuff, but I wouldn't be hit. He's the great voice. Like an all-time one, honestly. Let's see what else they have on this. It was on Prime Series. They don't have a lot of names and stuff attached to it, I can see. Prolific creator and showrunner Ronald D. Moore was hired for it. Okay, he wrote For All Mankind. He did Outlander. Well-respected shows. I still have to get around to them. For All Mankind, Helix, Battlestar Galactica.
It's really hard to predict whether or not these video game adaptations will be good or not.
Borderline impossible, I would
it
say.
It is, like, impossible.
Yeah.
You can get a good feel on, like, comic movies coming out, like, a lot of the franchise stuff, but this new wave, they really have, like, Hollywood hasn't found their footing yet on this mm-hmm. video game stuff, and it's clearly the next, like, frontier that they're gonna exploit until it's dry.
Yeah.
But, like, as of now, it's a shit show. I mean, like, Fallout, I thought was going to suck. Came out. It was great. The Last of Us Season 2 lost me completely, even though Season 1 I loved. There's, like, just a weird... There's a big gap in, like, the quality between all these projects. Whereas, like, even with comic book movies, they all kind of feel within the same range now.
Yeah, like a general...
Yes.
Yeah. There's very rarely one where it's like, that is so bad. Like, it's unfathomable how you made something that bad. They get like a New Mutants or something every now and then. But it's more far and in between. But yeah, I love the games. The narrative is right there built in, which is kind of the same thing with Last of Us Season 1. Like, they had everything built. They just kind of did it for the most part, shot for shot, except for like 2 episodes, which they blazed their own trail and did great shit. I'll always give Craig Mazin credit for it. Like the Franken... Finger Bill stuff. That was a footnote in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And then he built it into like a beautiful, one of the best episodes of TV that year, maybe even beyond.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And so like humongous credit to him. Even the stuff with like the other end of that too with Ellie and whoever her love interest was in the end of that first season. Was also that episode is really well done. In the second season, it just that got lost.
Yeah.
So maybe you could do the same thing here with God of War. Just be faithful to the material while also blazing your own track or your pale. Or
would you say it has a bigger fan base probably? Right?
Versus The Last of Us? Last of Us, they both are like a Game of the Year winner, right? I think God of War won Game of the Year. Like, they're both like, there's a big, big fan base for both of them.
Yes, for sure. God of War is like more populist, right?
I would say for sure, and mostly because it also had a fan base going back like 2 decades, basically. Because the first God of War is like early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So the history is there. But yeah, so that is God of War. I'm praying for success there.
Whatever happened to Gears of War? Wasn't that supposed to be a
they
movie?
Keep they go Bautista back and forth on
like
it.
Trying still.
He wanted to be on it and play Marcus Fenix. I forget who else they wanted to get onto that too. That's but there shame. Are there are people out there that could easily do that.
Oh yeah.
Which, again, it's just all about finding the right showrunner, finding someone that actually plays the games, unlike Halo, who's just like, I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want. I still can't believe how bad that show was. Like, the most unbelievable, like, fundamental just misunderstanding of the source material I've ever seen in my life. Like, everything that makes that game great. And it's not like they were, like, adapting something no one had played. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, or something no one knew the lore from, or like, not even deep lore. Like, everyone played Halo RH growing up. Everybody. Yeah. Even if they did do a lot of the campaign, if they just did multiplayer or whatever, like, they had the basics of the game down. So mm-hmm. just take that and just fucking be like, I'm going to do something completely different. Like, it's still crazy to me, making an emotional drama out of a story that centers around human robots with no emotion.
Yeah.
The whole point of them is that they had emotion ripped from them violently in their upbringing, in their creation. And they're like, nah, it's got to be, they got to fall in love. They got to dye their hair pink, which is a thing that happens in that, by the way.
They got the blue hairs got that
dude,
show?
Dude, the blue hairs got that show. It's crazy what they did to that show. Insane. And I feel bad for good boy Pablo Schreiber, too, because he didn't deserve that.
Oh, well, maybe they'll bring him back when they do, like, the Halo movie in 15 years. I'm sure they'll take another stab at it.
Neil Blomkamp, man. I feel like that window's passed for him, but I really wish he had got his fingers on that. He would have done something incredible. Okay, so before we get to our reviews, let's talk about... Or not talk about. Let's talk to Paul Walter Hauser, who we interviewed for The Naked Gun. We love The Naked Gun. They also brought us in for a screening of it, which was awesome of them. We've now seen it twice.
Yeah, I might go a third time.
I'm thinking the same thing. I want to go again, even though I already went with my fiance. I want to go with like as many friends as I can gather and throw them in the theater. I'm like, you guys got to watch this. It's so fun. We can't talk about, obviously, any specific scenes or anything like that. But when we watched it the second time, I was like in a twofold thing. I wanted to see how some jokes played with a different audience and like a certain car scene, let's say. And then I was also trying to find new jokes that I maybe missed in our first one because we were laughing too hard. And I did. And I feel like it's going to be one of those movies where you watch it multiple times and pick out new shit.
Oh, for sure. Like this is right up. Not only like people our age's alley, which is what I've been telling people, is like this is the perfect reboot in that it's going to bring back the old fans and they'll love it, but also like anybody our age who grew up with either The Lonely Island or I Think You Should Leave, so that's kind of Gen Z and millennials grouped in right there, you guys are also gonna love it because it blends like those three different eras of comedy perfectly and seamlessly, and it's so funny. Like there's a part of the movie where it just turns into an I Think You Should Leave skit, and it's so funny.
It's insane. And I think maybe to give you proof positive here, and I know we're sucking the movie off a lot here. Like, we left our screening of it, like, Frank the Tank loved it.
Yes.
Chris Klammer loved it. Also, our interns loved it. And they're all, like, 20. Like, they all loved it, too. So, think about it that way. The age range that this captured is insane. But again, let's hear from Paul Walter Hauser.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
All right, welcome, LCB, me, Rob, and we are here with Paul Walter Hauser, first time in a long time. Although you have hung out with Robbie Fox for a few times between then.
I did. He and I like to chat about our love of film and our love of the squared circle known as professional wrestling.
Squared circle. I love that. Yeah. Actually, we had, who did we have in the office yesterday? Rhea Ripley was in the office yesterday.
Oh, sick.
And CM Punk.
Oh, yes.
And CM Punk, there's a funny picture of Robbie. It was Robbie in the middle and then Rhea and CM Punk on the opposite sides. It looked like a divorced couple.
Punk is an all-time classic and Rhea Ripley's like a new classic, man. She is carving quite the career.
Mm-hmm. Rising star.
She's incredible, yeah.
You gotta get her in a movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude. She's got an unforgettable look, too. I bet based on what I see in the ring, she could legitimately act and stuff. That's exciting.
John Wick.
Oh,
there,
yeah.
Oh, we just made it. Anyway, we're here for The Naked Gun. Only one man has a particular set of skills to lead police squad and save the world, directed by Akiva Schaffer, Liam Neeson, Pam Anderson, Kevin Durant, Danny Huston, and yourself. Coming out August 1st, we saw it yesterday, absolutely loved it.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the most I've laughed in a theater in a long time.
Who'd you guys see it with?
It was a press screening in the back, and then I believe it was like a regular screening in the front. Something like that.
We were all friends by the time we left that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yes.
That's, I mean, sharing laughter with strangers is like one of the healthiest things one can do other than like drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Exactly. I missed it.
Yeah. And we were cracking up the entire time. Oh my God. It's like, and you feel like you miss that out of a theater experience these days.
Oh yeah, dude. I saw the movie last night with a handful of friends that they let me bring. So it was a small intimate screening with just the 10 of us or whatever. But dude, I have not laughed that hard watching a movie in a movie theater since maybe Bridesmaids.
Yeah.
Or Step Brothers, one of those, mm-hmm. probably.
Yeah. Oh my God, it was killing us.
It was amazing.
So to start out, as a child of the 80s, did you grow up watching this franchise?
I did. Yeah, I was born in 86. So, you know, by about the age of 8 and about like 94, I was watching Monty Python, The Holy Grail, The Jerk, the Naked Gun films, Airplane. Like that was becoming a big part of my identity was comedy. And Leslie Nielsen was just, you know, kind of on the Mount Rushmore of my childhood comedy, me and a lot of my buddies.
Mm-hmm. He's like an absolute god. So what was like your knee-jerk reaction when you hear about there being a reboot?
Well, I had heard about it like over a decade ago. They were going to reboot it with like Ed Helms or somebody. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I love Ed Helms. Maybe that'll be cool. And never heard anything about it. And then years later, it became a thing and people were talking about it again. And I know Seth MacFarlane was involved. But when I heard that it was Liam Neeson and Akiva Schaffer, I was like, oh, that might be really good. That might be like, they might actually do it. And sure enough, like 2 weeks before filming, they were like, do you want to play his partner? And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. It didn't really matter about the size of the role or what I did. It was more, you know, I feel like an NBA player. You know how NBA players like very much just sort of join teams that they think they can win a championship mm-hmm. with? It's like, what combination? It's almost like Hollywoodizing NBA where there's packages put together.
Yeah.
I do that with movies all the time, dude. I just find something where I'm like, surefire hit. They want me? Let's do it.
It's ring chasing. Yeah, it's ring culture. Yeah,
I mean, it's also worked. It's helped.
Yeah.
So being in dope movies is a nice thing. This was one that was a little trickier because you have a lot of expectation going in. You know, and there's a lot of pressure. But I just think everybody knew the assignment. Everybody did their job. And it comes from the top. The writers, Doug and Dan and Akiva and Paramount, all their passion, intellect, and comedy prowess really just torched the way here. And Liam.
Oh, my God.
Did you guys know Liam was that funny?
Yes, but only because life's too short. He's so funny.
That's the only thing I'd seen, the Gervais thing, right?
Yes.
He's got a great cameo in Ted 2. Let us not forget.
Atlanta. That too. Right.
Atlanta. His Lucky Charms.
And then he did, I haven't seen it, but The Million Ways to Die in the West.
Yes, he's very funny in that.
So, like, a lot of people did know he was capable, but I was kind of in the dark about it. And when I showed up to set, it's like certain things are funny on the page, but then he's saying them, and it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's way funnier when you hear his voice.
Yes. You mentioned before.
I had 5 chili dogs.
Oh, my like, God. That was the biggest laugh in the theater. Oh, my gosh, man.
And he's just ashamed of himself in the corner.
And Busta Rhymes is sitting there yelling, no!
We've all been there.
Yeah.
Well, it's like there are jokes in that movie that feel like, that literally feel like Homer Simpson or Peter Griffin or Steve Martin or Peter Sellers, and they're being nailed by Liam Neeson of Schindler's List and Taken.
Exactly.
Like that's wild. Like that is just not, there's not many dudes that can pull that off, I don't think.
Hey, you don't get to all those Academy Award and Golden Globe nominations without having at least a little bit of range.
Yeah, know? Yeah. It's, I mean, I guess Brad Pitt does it once in a while where you're like, man, he's really pretty and now he's really ugly and he's great in both. And it's like, you get to kind of like, a rare breed get to work in both worlds a lot.
And Daywalker,
Liam has just crushed it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned before there's a lot of expectations coming in when you're rebooting a franchise like this. So in my mind, there are two different kinds of people going into this movie. One are the people who have seen the originals, grown up with them, like yourself, and, you know, maybe a little apprehensive about another reboot. And the other are blank slates. Like my girlfriend had never even really registered these movies at any point in her lives, which thankfully I got to show them to her Saturday night, and
great
that
feeling.
Was a great time.
How fun.
So can
did
you
she like it?
Oh yeah, she loved it.
Sick.
Right up her alley. Cool. So can you offer up two different pitches? And the first one would be for that first group of people who, you know, maybe they're a little apprehensive about Liam Neeson taking the crown from Leslie Nielsen. And the other for those blank slates who they don't know anything about this franchise. And we haven't had a lot of studio comedies the past 10 years.
So for the blank slates who don't have a point of reference, you're paying your $15 to $25. You're signing up for a movie that is only out to make you laugh and make you forget about the headlines and the bills and all the things waiting for you in the real world. So as pure comedic escapism, we have tried to serve up a feast. And to keep the food analogy to those who know the older films, the originals, your grandmother used to make the best, you know, Italian food, right? Your nana. We have taken her gravy, Sunday gravy recipe, and we have recreated it. But we bought the best ingredients, and we flew in the vine-ripened Marzano tomatoes from Italy. And we spent 13 hours in the kitchen today making it. So just know that not only do we love the recipe, but we love your grandma, and we're not going to steer you wrong.
It's a great analogy.
I love that.
I think a lot of people kind of talk about Liam Neeson because it's a big shoes to fill. Leslie Nielsen was absolute god in this genre. But also, you had to fill in for George Kennedy. Like, that's no joke. And you're talking about another guy, kind of a daywalker that did fantastic dramatic work and also hilarious.
Right. I remember him in Cool Hand Luke, which I probably saw after Naked Gun. But the guy, got to do a lot of different roles and show different range. And I think, you know, I watched the originals just to study George Kennedy and to say, like, what can I, you know, there are moments in the original Naked Gun films where George Kennedy hears something Leslie Nielsen says that's super troubling, like talking about killing 800 people or something. And then
like the bounce,
you know,
off.
Kennedy will do a thing where he'll go, all right.
Furrowed brow. Like,
it's a lot of little stuff, but you're I was trying to hone in on that to where it felt like the real world and the Naked Gun world in one world. Because to do all the zany, wild, broad things, you have to first ground it and believe that there's some sense of reality, even though there'll be an upheaval of that throughout the film.
Now, you previously worked with Akiva on one of our favorite series. Many men our age, favorite series. I think you should leave. Albeit that was I think he did not direct the episode you'd been on, but he was obviously a producer throughout. What was it like collaborating with him again? And can you give us a little insight into what he was like as a director?
So me and my buddies used to call Saturday Night Live. We would call the 30 Rockefeller Plaza, like, regular desk number. And we would say, Akiva Schaff or Bill Hader or Andy Samberg on the 17th floor. And they would patch us right up to their office.
No way.
So back in the day, we sent, like, DVDs of our sketch comedy troupe. And sent, like, gifts to them and would call them and ask for, like, career advice.
Yeah.
And, like, Bill Hader called my house back. Akiva and Yorma talked to me on the phone for a while and, like, gave me advice and stuff in the middle of, like, rehearsals for SNL. Like, it was crazy. So they were always comedy heroes of mine from the get-go. And then I would, you know, I went to, like, the premiere for the movie Neighbors and a couple different Hollywood functions. And I would run into Akiva and just be like, oh man, I want to work with this guy so bad. Like that thing of like, wow, I talked to him on the phone and now he's here. And now it's like, oh, he just offered me Naked Gun. It's like such a crazy fanboy full circle moment for a guy like me who loves comedy. And so I think more than anyone involved in the film, I trusted Akiva and believed he knew what he was doing. Because he's just from Hot Rod to I Think You Should Leave. To
pop star, man, like it's crazy.
Pop star is great.
Even Chippendale,
Chippendale was unbelievable. I mean,
there's it's kind of the Lord and Miller thing where you're just like you have your hand in a lot of great quality comedy, and so getting to work with Akiva is a very big deal for me. Whether he actually believes that or thinks that or not, like it's it's definitely a bucket listy thing. And Liam, I grew up watching and. My mom showed me Before and After. My dad showed me Les Mis. One of my first grown-up movies in theaters that I saw, like, when I was of age was Gangs in New York.
Oh, yeah.
So seeing him go from like, and that's another thing, seeing Liam Neeson go from Gangs of New York to Love Actually to Batman Begins to Taken. Mm-hmm. It's like, this dude is the man.
Does everything.
He's the freaking man. He is. And now he's adding this like very specific comedy to his toolkit and his lexicon. And that's impressive, you know?
Yep. You mentioned sending in all those tapes to the SNL guys. I'm curious because the one thing I think the first thing I ever got introduced to you from was the blooper reel. Not even just the episode of It's Always Sunny,
Your
blooper reel scene where you crack up the entire cast of It's Always Sunny. Like, it made me cry laughing, I think, the first time I watched it. How'd you get that role?
I auditioned for a smaller like co-star in that show. And the casting director, Wendy O'Brien, was like, "You're funny. I like you. Well, you want to read this other part?"
Yeah.
And like, by the time I read the second part, she's like, "You want to read for the guest star?" I was like, "Yeah, what is it?" And she's like, "It's like a juggalo kid who's like hip hoppy and like he has a chip on his shoulder." And I was like, "I'm from Saginaw, Michigan. Like, I grew up with those guys. Like,
I've been to the gathering.
I know that world intimately." So, Faygo and Chicken Hunting and stuff. Like, I knew all that. So I took 20 minutes outside in the parking lot. And like just ran through the sides and then went up there and just like did what I could. And when I booked that, it was like very surreal because a year prior I was watching the show in my underwear drinking beer with my buddies at a college I would soon fail out of. And then here I am a year later on the show. So it's like it was very hard to deter me from acting in Hollywood because I just had so many dope things happen early on that I was like, it's possible. Anybody can do this.
Yeah.
And then it's like
a year later, you're cracking up Charlie Day on set.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And those guys were, to their credit, were super cool. And they let me improvise. They didn't know me. I didn't have any credits to my name, but they're like, "Oh, if you have a line, yeah, throw it in, mm-hmm. do an alt line."
So funny.
Have you ever had sex, and
the director of them, they kept some of my improv. They kept when I said about Lethal Weapon 4, they kept the thing where I say, "Man, I ain't seen the first couple though." and then there was something else. I forget.
Was Shackman the director of that one?
Matt Shackman directed that episode.
And of course, now full
and
circle.
Remembered me from, it's like, honestly, it's like Vince Gilligan directing Cranston on X-Files before he did Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. Shackman remembered me from that. We hadn't kept in touch at all. We were just fans of each other's work. And then one day, he has lunch with me and offers me Mole Man. Pretty crazy.
Unbelievable.
By the way, you're the first people I've said that in front of, Mole Man.
Mole Man?
Really? I've yet to say that in a single interview because I was like, Marvel hasn't announced
we're keeping a lookout. There's going to be like someone with a shotgun offset. Like, we're waiting for him to come in.
Not at all. No, you're good. Because Marvel was the one who revealed it. They had my likeness in a new comic book.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it was like their way of saying it without saying it. Yeah.
I love the handlebar mustache, by the way. In that comic strip, they had given your character a nice
handlebar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that always plays.
Very, very nice.
So we want to do something fun with you. We want to do what we say, call a combined ranking. So I'm going to give you, here's a list of parody movies. What we're going to do is it's almost kind of like a draft in a way.
Oh, wow.
Where you're going to get for the first pick here, and then I'm going to go.
It's a draft.
Think of it that way, yeah.
Oh, man. So, but let me ask you this. Is this based upon the quality of what it does for spoof stuff or just as a whole?
I think general entertainment product is what we're looking for here. And if some of them, for example, Naked Gun, you get the entire franchise when you pick it.
Which is a lot.
Which is a ton.
When you start adding it up.
Especially for
33 and a third.
33 plus. And a third plus two and a quarter, whatever it was.
Who starts?
You are the honor of the first pick.
What would be your top spoof movie, I guess, would be the question.
Exactly.
I mean, I have to say Naked Gun. I can't not say.
Contractually obligated?
Yeah,
contractually. Not even actually, though, because like it is just generally considered one of the best ever.
So you'll put a P by that for me or something?
Yes.
I got Naked Gun next up.
Wait a second.
I think I'm going to take Airplane. We interviewed Zucker, and I feel like it's a movie I watched 15,000 times growing up.
Yeah,
and after talking to him, it makes so much more sense, like just hearing all the stories behind the scenes, the acting, everything is great in that.
Yeah. And people say it didn't age well, but I'm like, you know, I don't think there's any like menacing, mean-spirited comedy. It's it's a little ignorant at points, but it's still just trying to make you laugh and be silly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'll take a movie that some people have said has aged poorly, but I don't think so. Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yes.
Wow. What a comeback he's making.
Mel Brooks?
Yeah, oh, Mel Brooks is all over the place
that
all of a sudden.
Seriously. That teaser killed me.
At like age 99, basically. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Do I get to go again, or does it now go to you? No, a draft usually you then
so
pick.
We thought about snaking. I think we go back to you.
We're not snaking. Okay. Yeah. I am going to go with... Oh, this is so hard.
There's so many good ones, right?
I have to go, This is Spinal Tap. I'm a Christopher Guest, Rob Reiner freak. I adore them.
We were talking about that before, how Reiner's like that period. He had like a 10-year period where he made like every single great movie.
I preach the gospel of Reiner all the time.
Yeah.
I know the order, too. I think I know it. It goes, in 84, it was Spinal Tap. Then it was Princess Bride, Stand By Me, Harry Met Sally, Misery.
Yeah.
A Few Good Men.
I think that sounds right.
And then
yeah.
The American President.
Dude, it's unbelievable. It's crazy.
I think that's 10 years.
And it's like such different lanes that he's going through.
All right, bro.
All right. I think I will go back to, but how do you miss Monty Python? It's like, there's so many on here where it's like, how do I go past this? I think I'll go Monty Python. I love Monty Python. It's one of those.
That was probably my next one.
And I love Life of Brian too. I didn't put it on here. It's not, I guess, really technically a spoof of anything, but like.
It's kind of a spoof.
Of the Bible.
The Bible, I guess, but like it is, it's so good. But I'd go with Monty Python, the Holy Grail. It's unbelievable still to this day.
Oh, so good. I'd be remiss if I let this fall out of the draft. It's Walk Hard.
Which you do love Walk Hard.
Walk Hard.
For me, I was 13 when that movie came out. It's the funniest movie of all time in my mind. I watch it endlessly. Can quote it front to back. I love the music.
Ain't nothing horrible gonna happen today.
Nothing.
You don't want none part of this shit.
It's so wrong, good. Kid dad.
Tim Meadows is a comedy icon to me. Oh, it's I so adore funny. Him. I have to go. I adore Team America. I have to go Team America.
Oh my God. It's one of those ones. It's like there's so many good ones on here. I almost forget how great that was.
What do you got?
Team America. I love Tropic Thunder. I love Shaun of the Dead. I love. Spaceballs is a classic. I gotta go Spaceballs.
Oh, wow.
I love Spaceballs.
Okay.
It's one of those things, again, when you watch Star Wars growing up, like you and your parents and your brother, like for me and my brothers, like we went and watched them a million times. And then my dad's like pulled it out of the chamber like last, like ninth inning. He's like, oh, check this out. We also have Spaceballs, which parodies all this. Blows your mind.
Amazing.
So that, I think I'll go with Spaceballs.
Good call.
I'm going to go with Austin Powers because I mentioned before I was 13 when Walk Hard came out, but I was like 5 years old when Austin Powers, the franchise was really cooking.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, my parents would let me rent those movies. And all that humor completely changed me for the rest of my life.
Oh, dude, me and my buddy Evan Chisholm would watch Austin Powers and Dirty Work on repeat. Those were like our
Dirty Work. Version. Yeah.
I'm going to go... It's so tough. I don't even want to tell you what I'm thinking of because then I don't want you guys to steal it. I'm very competitive here. I have to go with Shaun of the Dead. I just think it's a perfect movie. Okay. Oh, it's a perfect
movie. And you said we get the franchise, movie. Too. So we get Shaun of the Dead.
You get the Cornetto trilogy.
We get a Hot Fuzz. And
you get World's End. I guess you technically, but like...
Hot Fuzz is on the list separately.
It is separately. That's true.
Okay. Not related. Not related. Go ahead.
But Shaun of the Dead is unbelievable. So I think the Shaun of the Dead, man. That's our list of 10. We went for 10 on this one. So the rest of them, unfortunately, get left off of this.
What?
It's part of the important.
We will post the rest of them.
Do we each get? Let's each do one alternate.
Okay, we'll do one alternate.
One alternate.
Okay.
One alternate. Starting now with you because I just
went. Right. So if we get an alternate, I would do. Man, I love Black Dynamite. It's so funny. I'll do Popstar though. Popstar is.
I was about to say, take Popstar.
Yeah.
I know you want to.
I love Popstar. It's so funny. Sandberg is so fucking... Everything about him in that movie is amazing.
The thing that kills me about that movie is the music is just legitimately...
It's
just
good.
Legitimately good.
It's just good. Which is just so Lonely Island.
The F. Bin Laden song is...
The F. Bin Laden, Mona Lisa.
One of the catchiest things I've ever heard in my life. You know that Lonely Island did the Lego Movie song too, right?
Yeah, wait. I remember reading about that. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Everything is awesome.
Yeah, everything is awesome.
Which is like...
And you're part of a team. Yeah.
Yes, it's like the simplest pop song lyrics.
Yeah. So good.
So catchy.
What do you got?
Let's go Young Frankenstein. I kept going right past it because it's right there at the top of this list we have.
That was going to be my next one. So my alternate...
Yeah.
My alternate is going to be... Did anyone say Airplane yet?
I said Airplane. That's my second pick.
I said Airplane.
That's the second overall. Don't worry.
Honestly, I'm going to give some love to Not Another Teen Movie. Mm-hmm. And I know that's not what people would think of right away. But low key, I saw that like 3 or 4 years ago. I rewatched it randomly. Kind of funny. Randy Quaid, I miss him.
Very funny.
Chris Evans, when he wants to turn it on in that movie. Oh, he's hilarious.
I feel like I miss him being in like a sort of like a traditional comedy like that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he has a juice for it.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, Evans in Knives Out is funny.
Oh my gosh, he's so good. He's like, I mean, he turns it on for the menacing too.
What was cool, I like when unconventional casting brings in different people and they kill it. Like, well, in this movie, it was like Danny Houston. It's like, I don't know that I've seen Danny Houston do comedy.
Ever.
But him and Kevin Durant, CCH Pounder, they all nailed it. I thought the casting was really, it was well put together, right?
He's like such a cool, like funny guy. Remember, because I watched the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, his whole press tour. He was hysterical. And then when he cast him in this, I'm like, oh, this actually feels like a great fit for it. And he was great.
Yeah, he's an actor's actor. Guys like him, Peter Sarsgaard, they kill everything they're in, whether it's good or bad. They always show up, you know.
So our final parody list, let's say draft rankings, is Naked Gun, Airplane, Blazing Saddles, This is Spinal Tap, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, Walk Hard, Team America, Spaceballs, Austin Powers, Shaun of the Dead, with our alternates being Popstar, Young Frankenstein, and not another teen movie. Again, Naked Gun, well placed in the top spot, though.
Yes.
I think we crushed those. Proud of those, man.
I'm proud of us. We did a good job, right?
We did a great job.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel good about that.
And you should feel good about Naked Gun, man. That is, I'm trying to think of a theater experience other than this. And like you mentioned before, maybe Friendship, where I laughed that hard in a theater. And it's really, you don't get much.
Yeah.
It is
this
so
is a good
fun.
Year for comedy, I think.
It's a good year for movies.
I want to get the ball rolling, though. I want this to be a massive hit. I want all the studios to be like, we need more studio comedies.
Yeah, I hope so. I try to think of what do you call it? The chronology of studio comedies. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've laughed this hard since probably Step Brothers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were movies after that where there were great comedies. I love Hangover and I love Bridesmaids and there's a lot of good ones. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I've laughed this hard since Step Brothers, which would have been 08.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh. I've not laughed this hard in 17 years.
It's a long time.
To me, that says a lot.
You laugh, and then like before the next joke even hits, you haven't even caught your breath. Like,
or you miss a joke because you're still laughing something that happened. Like, I had some people hit me up. They're like, I need to see it again because I don't even know what joke's in this.
Exactly.
We were doing a back and forth this morning. Like, remember this? Remember this?
Yeah, we were just doing that, which is so fun. You miss that. Like, being at a water cooler and being like, can you remember this line? Can you remember this line? Like, those sort of things.
Yeah.
You miss that. And I think that we've been singing the praises of, like, Twitter, Instagram. Just like, hey, August 1st, when this movie drops, go watch it with a crowd of people or with your friends.
It's not going to be the same week four. Like, go week one, week two. Like, you have to see it with a full house. I also just like, I'm thinking more and more about like comedies. Cause that is like on my arm, I have a tattoo that has all my comedy heroes on it.
Oh, nice.
Have you seen this?
I don't think so.
No.
It's a little weird that I'm going to expose my man chest here.
Go ahead.
Pull out my arm so you can see all my comedy heroes tattooed. I got
Martin Short,
Daniel Stern, Chris Farley, Jim Varney, Jim Carrey and Robin Williams.
That's unbelievable.
But like comedy is what got me into acting. It wasn't like I was a little kid watching The Piano. You know, like I was watching Ernest and Naked Gun and, you know, like Paramount just seems like one of those companies that actually loved comedies.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop, Wayne's World, Tommy Boy, Zoolander. These are
classics, like, you know.
These are freaking classics. I hope Paramount leans into it. Also, didn't Paramount do Jackass?
I believe so. Yeah, that's VH1,
so that
right?
That paid off.
Tropic Good Thunder,
Lord.
Too, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's for real.
Like, Paramount, I feel like, gets comedy. So it just does take the right folks to involve and the right, you know, project picking, I suppose. Mm-hmm, but I'm so proud of them for taking a big swing with this movie.
And
like, I don't speak well of studios that often. It's usually, you know, a bunch of us complaining, even though these are the people that hire us. But Paramount's crushing it right now by making this decision.
It's usually people doing stuff like from the studio, like the show, which is hilarious.
right. Oh, God, that was a fun one.
Yeah. But again, a big communal laugh is something like it's so it's almost hard to even describe how like euphoric you get, like when you're with a big crowd laughing at like the screen, you know what I mean? And it's just, it's fun, man. You gotta go see this opening week, August 1st. Go see it, please.
Get some friends.
Get some friends.
Like, get some friends. Go as a group, because it was, I cannot wait to go back again.
We just saw it together and we were just like, going the entire time.
Just
like, what's this? By the way, like, we were watching it and like we literally nudged each other, like, that's a Lauren Bolf score, isn't it? That's Lauren. That's Lauren. That sounds like Mission Impossible, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Like the second there's a moment and you'll know it when it happens, we're like, are they really doing it? Are they spoofing?
Yeah.
There's a couple lines too that I remember Akiva or somebody said to me at one point, they're like, well, we'll see if we get to keep the OJ joke. And I looked at them and I was like, if you don't keep the jokes that are funny, you're not making a comedy. Like, I know you're trying to be timid and like be careful, but like, that's not comedy.
I'll tell you what,
it doesn't mean you have to be mean-spirited. I think there is a line of decency that, like, at some point you can go, okay, that might be offensive, but everything in this movie is just for the sake of poking you in the ribs and making you chuckle.
And that they had that one in the trailer too. And that in the trailer
the
was
house
like,
down.
That was smart.
Time.
That was smart that they put that in the trailer. I saw that. I was like,
I got a big laugh in theaters and trailers. I got a big laugh when they dropped it on just on social online. Like, I was like, oh, I'm sold. Like that, they get it. You know what I mean?
To your earlier point of like the blank slated people versus the legacy watchers, like everyone's going to laugh at that joke for kind of the same reason, with or without the context, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you can do that, that's great.
So again, Naked Gun comes out on August 1st. Make sure to go watch it. Again, cannot emphasize this enough. Go with the crowd. It is so much fun. Just having a big crowd laugh. I'm going to watch it again. I'm going to go take my wife. I'm going to take friends. I'm going to be like, go watch this.
Also, my plea is, when you bring one or two people or more, I'm the type of person, especially when I lived in LA or like when I was single, now I have a family and I purposely spend all my time with my family. But when I was like, I would just grab 12 people and go, you want to go to the Arclight Hollywood?
Yeah.
And go see such and such, Gone Girl opening weekend, whatever. Mm-hmm. So like, if you can, if you bring a group, try to specifically pick out a friend or family member who's recently gone through something difficult.
Even better. Yeah.
Be strategic in some odd non-religious way, ministering to somebody who needs to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Please do that. That would be my plea.
Yeah, I think they'll have to leave in a much happier state.
Absolutely.
So again, Paul, thank you so much for joining us. And hopefully we'll see you again sometime
soon.
Yeah,
we'll do this again for sure. Yeah,
Stella Blue Coffee's new canned lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations. So when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today. Taste the difference and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much to Paul Walter Hauser. Excellent interview as always. This guy, I mean, he's the best.
He's simply the man. Like, I would, his story about calling Rockefeller Plaza and just asking for Andy Samberg and being let, like, that just would never fly today.
No, never going to happen. He's getting kicked off of the airways. But, yep, thank you to him. And now we have Jeffin, who's here for – you stopped by Milburn or Milburn Deli, right?
Yeah. I got sandwiches getting ready to put them on a plane.
Yeah.
Got some ice packs. That's that good of a sandwich.
Ship it back to Texas. Yeah, everyone knows they don't have good food there.
No.
You got to make sure you bring good stuff there.
No, hell no.
No, terrible food you have to bring. They don't have good deli. Nobody has delis like New Jersey.
True. That is a deli thing. But yeah, we could talk about Fantastic Four First Steps, a movie that I think is super highly anticipated. Obviously, MCU kind of in weird limbo. Thunderbolts was really good earlier this year. Kind of hyped us up and going into this, kind of resetting, getting an old property back into the mix. Especially after the last Fantastic Four is one of the worst, maybe not even just comic book movies, just one of the worst movies.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember interviewing, what's his name?
Matthew Vaughn
about that.
Like, yeah, sometimes flush down the toilet.
Yeah, should just flush that one down. I don't think necessarily the case in this one, thank God. But just to give you the preamble, forced to balance their roles as heroes with the strength of their family bond, the Fantastic Four must defend Earth from a ravenous space god called Galactus and his enigmatic friend, or Herald, the Silver Surfer. Directed by Matt Shackman, who we've also talked to before. Awesome, super hilarious guy. Super funny. Obviously directed
WandaVision for already Marvel, but also did like the best seasons of It's Always Sunny. The crew, everyone knows by now, Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby, Evan Moss Bacharach, Joseph Quinn, Ralph Ineson plays Galactus or voices Galactus, also kind of.
Yeah, he physically, played him. Played him
he physically plays him, yeah.
Yeah.
Julian Garner as the Silver Surfer, and then a couple other as we go, including Paul Walter Hauser and Natasha Lyonne, who we were talking about this earlier. She looks like she reverse aged 20 years for this role. Crazy how good she looked in that. But yeah, so the Fantastic Four, I think I know at least me and Jeff are on the same wavelength as far as what the issues we had with it, but on the good side of things, I think that the movie kind of like all the stuff that you wanted to be good out of this, which is kind of like lacking out of some of the previous ones, was all good. Production value I thought was great as far as practical sets. All the practical sets look great. They captured that vibe perfectly, that old like atomic era 50s stuff. The music, Giacchino fucking crushed it.
Yeah, very good score.
And I don't know if you guys were, I was kind of worried just because of the similarity to Incredibles, like you kind of, how far away can you get from that? I think it was totally different pretty much every way. Score was great. I think the acting was pretty much solid across the board. Innocent was awesome. I think for Garner, getting any emotion across the screen through the CGI silver face, not easy. Pascal also, I think this is the first time in like 3 years Pedro Pascal has actually gotten to play a character in a movie. Like, they've just been casting him as like supporting roles where he gets to do nothing just for like marketing reasons, I guess. And is he actually played someone?
He played a great widower, or not widower. What was he in Eddington? Just a guy whose wife left him.
He was just there in Eddington. Like, Joaquin Phoenix was playing something, you know what I mean? He was great. Vanessa Kirby, I think, big star, really came out of this like way better than anyone else. I think I was right about Joseph Quinn just not being the right pick for Johnny Storm at all, but I think he hit his ceiling for this role, if that makes sense. And then I think the only issues I really have with it are this, probably the same one you have, Jeff, which is the pacing is just tough.
Yeah, I know, it's just short. It's just too short. And like, I think they were too worried about it becoming a mess, which is what they weren't worried about with Superman. And Superman was a mess, but it was fine because the messy stuff was made up for with the good stuff. And they should have let the reins off on this movie. And they clearly were cutting a lot of stuff out. There's a lot of scenes from the trailers that were cut out, which is not unnatural for Marvel, but it was, it just couldn't breathe. And like, I liked everything I saw, but we didn't get enough time with almost anybody, which is a bummer because I think it was good, but it could have been really good. They just didn't let it really. I, from what I understand, from what I've read and seen, is they let the test audience really dictate a lot here.
Okay.
Because they changed quite a bit based on early reactions and stuff. And I think it was a mistake. They was a mistake.
Yep.
They changed things in Superman they shouldn't have changed from test screenings and test audiences. And that's why the movie is under 2 hours long, which I don't think it doesn't need to be that short.
And they also almost took out stuff Gunn was saying that I think was good for the movie. Like, they wanted to take out the squirrel saving, which I think, like, that to
which
me is
Gunn put his foot down on.
Yeah, Gunn was like, no, we're not getting rid of
they
that.
They took out the title cards in Superman. They're gonna
And
I just think they clearly cut out a lot of stuff Fantastic Four to keep it simple, keep it straightforward, which I get to an extent. The other movies have been a failure, and people don't like the franchise anymore. That changed. This is good enough where I think, like, it's going to be a success, but it was good, and the reason that's a bummer is because there was a lot of, like, it wasn't like, oh, wow, they got it to be good. That's a relief. They're like, they had what I think was probably close to a great movie, and they trimmed it down so much that it just ended up being only good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is middle-of-the-road Marvel for me, but it's in a weird spot where I don't want to go at it too hard because they really do nail a lot of the things that they've been struggling with for years now. I mean, the production value is fantastic, like you said. It feels very Phase One in the fact that it has its own visual identity, its own world built out, its own lore.
People want the rest of the MCU to live in that world.
Yeah,
I know.
At the end of Doomsday, they want it to be in that world, which,
it'd be too confusing for a general audience, but yeah, that world is so fun and like just looks completely different from the mainline MCU, which has, in a way, turned into a car commercial. This feels like it's ripped straight from the comics. But like you guys have both said, it's moving so quickly, which is a shame because going in, I was excited about that under 2 hour runtime. I was like, this is good. Like, even if this doesn't end up being my favorite thing ever, as long as there's some good action scenes, we're in and out. It's not a 3 hour endeavor. Everyone will be happy. Because of that quick runtime, everything just starts moving so fast. And I like that opening. I like that they skipped the origin story, but I never felt really able to sit down and connect with any of these characters. And there's a lack of charisma here, but I really don't think it's on the actors. I think it's more just on the material. They don't have much to work with at any point. And the one person who does get stuff to work with, Vanessa Kirby is the clear standout.
Yeah, she crushed it.
So, yeah, there are some, like, nitpicks along the way. There's some CGI in the third act, and really the third act in general, I think, is where it kind of crumbles. But outside of that, there's so many fun parts. We can talk about the middle sequence in space, which I think is, like, the best thing Marvel's done since Endgame. Like,
yeah,
bar none.
Very cool.
Like, very good, like a classic blockbuster set piece, just paying homage to a lot of other things while also making just this really cool experience. So middle of the road for me, but there's so many great things here. I mean, really great things.
Yeah, so I think we should talk about some spoiler stuff now. I think that something that was frustrating to me is we don't really get a lot of the powers for every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like we see Mr. Fantastic stretch twice in the movie, which is crazy. Like, the Thing, you already know he beats shit up. You get more of, I think, Johnny Storm than anything.
Yeah.
Probably, but, like, that's maybe just because he needs to go fly up and talk to people, whatever. And then I think even Sue Storm, like, it's kind of, you get one invisibility scene, like.
She's got the, I mean, it's the classic throw your hands up and make a face.
Make a face thing, yes. Yeah.
It's not a tough power, those are just tough powers to
even
do.
Galactus, it's like, he's just like, this guy's fucking big.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like I really wanted more out of this, at least from that angle.
When they did show the powers, it was good stuff, too. That is kind of the bummer. It's dialed back on everything that kind of makes it just middle of the road. I mean, I gave it an 84, and it's a good 5 below Superman, for example, and which is crazy because I actually think this is like a tighter movie in terms of like A to Z, and Superman probably has more messy parts in Fantastic Four.
Yep.
But again, James Gunn and them, you know, they weren't afraid to let it be a mess, and because of that, it resulted in some incredible stuff, which I do think was probably their Fantastic Four, but they did not let it ever get beyond what it was, which is a shame. Because I love that it's a self-contained story. I was convinced that the world was going to explode.
Really? I thought the world was somehow going to get transported.
I thought it was going to be teleported.
That made sense, too. So when they said that, I was like, oh, okay, this is how it's going to happen.
Same.
Yeah.
But then I was like, because I initially thought they'd just blow up and die, and that's why Fantastic Four are seen at the end of the Thunderbolts. It'd be dark. But like, also, if it's a universe we never see again, it's like, all right.
I mean, they did comedically kill off, like, Asgard.
So, like, it is possible. So, like, but even then, I was happy they didn't. It was very, was contained in itself, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Back to the powers thing. It is a little. The personalities didn't. This is goes back to the pacing. The personalities really didn't have time to separate themselves because by the end, you're like, is Johnny Storm like? If you didn't know anything about these characters, you would be like, is Johnny Storm the smart one? Because like
figuring out the language and shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Figuring out the language. I feel like Reed never got a chance to really show his intellect. I feel like he only took L's.
He kind of did. Yeah.
At least intellectually, and then Galactus also. There's, like, just stuff missing that, like, there's a very clear, it's like everyone is saying 20 to 30 minutes is missing, and it really does feel like about 20 to 30 minutes, like, a bit in the Ben Grimm storyline. Like, what is going on with Natasha Lyonne and him? Like, what is that storyline? Just take it out completely if you're not going to take it anywhere. The Johnny Storm stuff, I think, borders on annoyance with his Silver Surfer infatuation.
Yeah.
It doesn't derail it, but there's just, like, I wish there was more of that, and I definitely wish we had more time with Reed Richards, who is just, I know it's a family, and I know they're supposed to all share the load, but I think you do have to single out one person to be the rock, and really the leader in the face.
There's
and
a little
I don't
rock,
know if
yeah.
they gave, that's true, there
there's
is
a little rock.
Rock,
man.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really wish they had positioned and centered him, or I guess they centered Sue, but I think Mr. Fantastic is the de facto leader, and I really wish they gave him the chance to shine as that leader, which I don't think he really got.
Yeah, and again, it's missing some personality. You know, I think they focused because maybe in that directive of like, hey, you need to cut down some time, they were like, okay, then let's, instead of giving them their own individual shit, let's just focus on their connection, like their family. Mm-hmm. Like, all the family stuff, I think, was pretty great.
I mean, first act through the second act are just great. Like, really great stuff. It's just the third act, really.
Yeah, so there's one part in the third act, which I saw. I mentioned it. I feel like no one, I'm dumb and I'm just the only one that noticed this or something like that. The baby really threw me for a fucking loop in that third act. And to me, when you're thinking about like big budget movies that have, so many have tried to do something with a CGI baby, and it's fucked them up royally.
Yeah, you can't
every
do it.
Time.
People, you just can't do it. It's just
Flash
nobody,
does it. Fucking what do you call it? What was the vampire shit? Twilight did it. Fucked up. Even like American Sniper with the fake baby. Like, you can't do it with babies.
I've seen worse, but it wasn't great, and it was noticeable in spots. And I get it. Like, they have to get to that part of the story. It's great to see he's grown up for Avengers Doomsday. Yeah.
Yes, very great.
That was nice to see a good
He's reading Darwin.
Yeah. Great decision on their part to do that. Because you can't see him as a baby much longer. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. That was egregious to me. But I think for the most part, other than the CGI stuff was pretty good. I'd say they limited it as much as they could.
Pretty great. At points, it's like really great. Like I said, back to the space chases, like phenomenal.
I think it's only the baby. I think only the baby is the problem. I think Galactus looks really good. I think the baby is a problem.
Did you like I love the surf sequences. I love time Galactus Silver Surfer is doing anything surfing on time.
Yes, the surfing on the warp
was
crazy.
Cool. That's crazy.
Yeah, it really was just the baby. The baby stands out as like. But again, that's like it's weird. Like, I mean, it's not an excuse for them, but like.
They
That's
have to have
what
baby.
Happens. Babies, they can't do babies.
Yeah, you can't do stunts with babies, which is an unfortunate thing. But from what I can tell, based on my, because I kept it as broad as possible, obviously, because that's a big kind of spoiler thing. I was like, yeah, there's like a third act CGI thing, which is like a cardinal sin to me in blockbuster movie making. And everyone's like, oh, I didn't even notice it, which I think is good. Maybe I'm the one that didn't notice it because number two,
it's definitely one of those things where we notice it. And watching the average moviegoer is not,
which is good. I totally take the L on that, and that's totally fine. But I love that the whole middle act, like you were saying, was great. I love when you get into Galactus's ship. What's that fear of big objects, like monolithophobia or something?
You're throwing out that's the biggest word ever used on this podcast.
But like when you walk into like the throne room for him or whatever, and you look up and it's just, you feel the scale of that. I loved that. Mm-hmm. When he comes down to Earth, was fucking sick.
Yes.
Like, yep. That was cool. The water.
Yep. Yep. Ripping shit out of the ground. Just like taking a whiff of it.
I will say, very cool character. I've seen it twice now. I do not understand his motivations at all, I think from what I've understood from comic book, like people who really read the Fantastic Four comics, I think he doesn't have much motivation in the comics either. Like,
just eat planets.
He just is an eater, real eater.
I like that they didn't kill him.
Yeah.
Clearly he's going to come back at some point, which is good. It just, I do think it's a tough first character. I get why they do Galactus, but like it's crazy. They did do Galactus though. Again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kind of curious if they would have done could you do Mole Man for a whole movie though? Like, I don't know.
Silver Surfer, I think, could have been positioned as like your Ronin from the first galaxy. I think that would have been a more interesting play. Have Silver Surfer as like the, I don't know what you'd call it.
Like your first, your underboss?
Yes. Yeah. Your top henchman. Teasing a Galactus or teasing a Doctor Doom in the shadows versus the Galactus character is just very. Especially once he got onto Earth, the scale of things started to get a little shaky, and you kind of, I don't know, it just became a little murky for me.
Yeah.
It might just be a function of the Silver Surfer was so fucking cool that I just really wanted more.
Yeah.
I thought she was a little bit more fleshed out as a character, like her motivations were clear to me. I don't know.
I'm trying to think of like what else I would want, like if there was a Drew Shackman cut of Fantastic Four, what I'd really want to see.
She did say today will not be happening.
Yeah, Marvel's never done
too
one,
much.
Right?
Too much VFX for like extra
to
scenes.
Redo.
Oh, fuck, just give us sucks. The previs. They just intersplice. Yeah.
They released the previs. I think they released the original scene of the Thing and the dating show today too.
Oh, okay, cool.
There's a Comic Con thing. There's so many more cool character moments, and the bummer is that you're not going to get another movie with them until. After two Avengers
Doomsday.
Movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which they do seem to be pretty big parts of it. I mean, Fantastic Four is a pretty natural bridge with the X-Men, and which it does seem like Avengers Doomsday will be the X-Men against the Avengers. That seems to be what it is going to be. I just wish you had more time with them, because they're all, I mean, I loved all four of them. I think they're great characters. Did it right. It's just like, I think it's Superman and Fantastic Four are two great examples of properties that were failing and needed to succeed. And both are the same thing. They both try to reset in the best way they possibly could and move as far away from the old shit. But one decided to take the leap a little stronger, where like, if we fuck this up, this might stink. And that's what worked with Superman. Now, obviously, that could have been a disaster, because the entire James Gunn project would have failed if that movie stunk. And Avengers has to bridge. They have to bridge the gap to Avengers now. But it is very interesting, because they're two very similar things that needed to be successful, or we'll never see those characters again, at least for a long time.
Yeah.
I just wish they would have taken a few more risks, because it's, even people who don't love the movie love the characters in the movie, and they had something. And I guess the test screenings test screenings might need to end.
They do. I mean, like, they loved The Flash.
Yeah, they did. They went nuts over The Flash.
Because there's too much good here for you to think that what happened before was like terrible. Yeah. I don't think they had a bad cut. I think it might have just been a little long. And that is what it is. It's like,
yeah,
we're 50 movies into the MCU. It's like, just let it breathe.
Like you said, it's very close to being great. Like, very, very close to being great. Yeah. Great.
Dude, everything else.
Another half hour.
Yeah, another half hour. I think everything else about it was just, it fits so well in its own little world. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was part of it. Like, we don't want to invest in so much in world building, a world that's going to be gone basically forever, like after this one movie. But like that, it sucks because everything there was cool. It was fresh. It was new. It wasn't like you were saying, the car commercial sort of Marvel, whatever Earth. Well,
are you familiar with Reed or not Reed? What is the baby? Franklin Richards' powers, which I'm discovering.
The cosmic online. God.
Yes. Which he can apparently just create realities and universes. So there are theories now that this is how we get to a singular timeline.
Okay.
He just compresses MCU, and like we, you know, put everything into one universe in a nice little box and we can get away from all this madness we've been experiencing for 5 years. What if Franklin creates a nice little fun universe, like something more similar to 428 or 828?
Sounds like they visit this universe.
In Doomsday?
That's what Feige said, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, I believe that they are visiting the universe.
They would be dumb to completely get rid of like this aesthetic. Like,
yeah. My guess is they won't.
Yes.
And they'll pivot on it. I mean, they're still saying they're writing the script on set. So my guess is, which I assume a lot of that is going to be, I assume a lot of it was based on reaction of Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. My guess is a lot of Fantastic Four stuff probably lessened if, I mean, it is Doctor Doom, but my guess is they would have altered if like this movie came out with bad reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's not glowing, like most people like it, so I don't think they're going to scale back much at all. But I do think they were waiting on that.
Yeah.
So they have. I'm trying to look at some of the other Fantastic Four villains that, because they already did Galactus, but they can also bring back the Doctor Doom. Obviously, is their number one. Kang the Conqueror is one of theirs, but I feel like Kang is just gone too.
He's dead.
Maker. Which is Evil Reed Richards.
Thawne Maker,
yeah. Evil Reed Richards is one of them. Ravonna Renslayer. That feels like there's a character that was... Oh.
Renslayer. That's the TVA girl.
That is Kang's queen, I guess. Super Skrull. I think we're done with the Skrulls. I think the Skrulls got killed by...
No, they got to figure something out with Rhodey. Rhodey is a Skrull.
Oh, God.
I forgot about that.
So people think that could be temporary, like he's somewhere else. I don't know.
God, I fucking hate it.
That one's tough.
Secret Invasion was so bad, dude. I cannot believe that cost like what's her name? Million.
Kira. Where's Kira? How does Kira fit into Avengers Doom today?
Get the fuck out of here.
Would you guys think, speaking on Doom, thoughts on the mid-credit?
I liked it.
I don't know if I believe it's actually him.
On set?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why would they not have shown his face? I get it. I guess that's
a contract thing for sure.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, that's a great way to... I mean, imagine they showed his face.
No, I gotta know.
I'd be off the charts.
Yeah.
I don't know how they didn't, like, to be honest.
But I guess the trailer, I'm sure the reveal in the trailer is going to be huge. I mean, there are the theories that people think that he's actually not Dr. Doom either, that this is all a fucking ruse.
Some ruse to get.
Who could he possibly
Iron
be?
Man back or I don't something? Know. Oh, okay. Well, he's another Skrull. We got to get more Skrulls in here somehow.
Oh, God.
The goats of the MCU. But yeah, I think we're all basically kind of in agreement. I think I'm probably closer to Jeff. I'm like probably an 80.
We're gonna build a Marvel.
Be a fucking Marvel, mate. I can't do that. I can't do a list.
84. 84, yeah. Superman, 89.
I'm happy with like roughly an 80 for Superman. Or for, not for Superman, for this.
65, 70?
Mm-hmm. It's crazy to say that if this had been, I wish if it was messier and longer, it probably would have been better. But that's it's an easy comparison because that's exactly what Superman was.
Yeah.
Superman was longer and messier, but it had better stuff because they let it breathe and they let it be it. They kind of let it happen. Where this they clearly held it back in spots.
Yeah, I'm trying to make it really user friendly. Like maybe that's the way to describe it. Like they're very, very obsessed with that, and I don't think that necessarily played well. But also, I think you should trust Matt Shackman. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they should have trusted him more. It was a bummer.
Especially after like WandaVision is probably like their second best series out of all like the 1800 Marvel series they made, like only behind Loki. And even Loki kind of fell off a little bit towards the end. So yeah, that is Fantastic Four. We are very excited about it. I think the good news is it wasn't bad. You know what I mean? Like it's impossible to be like that's a bad movie. I don't see how anyone could feel that way about it.
Yeah, no, that's I think the. What they kind of, I think it feels like that's what they set out to make was not a bad movie. Like they're just like, this can't be bad. And to their credit, there's not a lot of glowing, like this is a masterpiece reviews, but there aren't a lot of like, this is a bad movie.
No, people don't like, people don't dislike it.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is good for Marvel and their future moving forward. And again, I think like you're saying, especially after Thunderbolts, when like you see them take a little more
risks as far as like, hey, we got some cool characters, let's just let them shine, do their thing, and then they all get like their own backstories established, like, and all that shit in their own kind of mini little universe. Not getting that out of these guys kind of stung, but still liked it, still enjoyed it. Like seeing Pedro Pascal actually getting the act for the first time in 2 years, something like that. So really enjoyed it. But that is
longest gap between a comic book movie ever in the modern comic book era.
Yeah, and then next
like in this in Spider-Man?
Since Iron Man came out, since Iron Man and No Way came out, or Dark Knight, whatever it marks like the start, this is the longest gap between two movies in any universe combined.
Wow.
And what do we have
it's
next?
Between now and I believe Spider-Man.
Brand New Day in July of next year.
And that'll be up against Supergirl, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Almost an entire full year. Actually, it might be more than a full year. It might be like a year and like a week or something.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then they'll have 6 months between that and Doomsday.
They have a series coming out, right? Wonder Man?
Yes.
That's finally coming out?
Yeah. He was on the red carpet in character as Wonder Man.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they're filming something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, weird.
It's like, all right.
I like him, though.
But yeah, longest gap, because then Supergirl's not out till December, right?
Yeah, although I'm very excited about that.
There's Peacemaker, and like there's other stuff, but yeah, movie-wise, it's the biggest gap. It's kind of crazy.
Actually very excited for Peacemaker, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I rewatched that recently, getting ready for it. Man, it's so like effortlessly funny.
Yeah, very excited for that.
Yeah, and Brand New Day with Destin Daniel Cretton on top of that as well.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. And after we was talking about it, Shang-Chi didn't get, I don't think, got a fair shake by a lot of people, but it was very good.
You have to imagine he shows up in that movie.
Shang-Chi? I don't see why not. What's the connection?
He hasn't been in a single other thing.
That is crazy.
That's
he shows up in what? In
I could see him showing up in Brand New Day.
Yeah, I think he could be in Wonder Man too, right? Isn't there a connection?
Is
maybe
there?
Wrong on that.
I know there's been like people always post the old like Spider-Man training with Shang-Chi crossover issue. So that's where I was pulling that
from. That'd be cool.
Let's see. Apparently there is some sort of crossover, and also Shang-Chi or Destin Daniel Cretton is
directing it.
Yeah, and he's a showrunner on that.
They do say it's street level though, and he's not very street level, Shang-Chi.
No, although does he have
mythical.
Fights dragons?
Does he have the rings? No, right? They put the rings away.
They got to figure out what the rings are too.
Yeah,
wasn't there a reveal on them?
I assume
Ms.
the rings
Marvel?
Are connected. Yeah, but yeah. I mean, the Marvels is going to have a pretty big impact on Doomsday too, because I do believe. It's the X-Men connection.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes.
So. Dude, someone posted a clip from Captain Marvel the other day, and like it was this beginning of a clip, and like, no, nothing in Marvel's done anything like this. And I didn't even realize what movie it was from until like the 30-second part.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're
so
forgettable.
Yeah, it's going to be you are not going to have to watch the Marvels to watch Avengers Doomsday, will be my prediction. That'll be a very quick... Be a quick learning experience for audience who haven't seen it.
It'll be like 28 years later with 28 weeks. They're just like, yeah, that maybe happened.
Yeah.
I guess. Something like that. But yeah, so that's the Fantastic Four. We'll let Jeff go to catch flight now.
I'm going to watch Happy Gilmore on this flight.
Yeah, and then we will talk about some Happy Gilmore 2. All right, let's talk now about Happy Gilmore 2. So Happy Gilmore 2, a movie that I've definitely been dreading, I think, a little bit. Because I've never been a guy where it's like, you're going to ruin the original. You're going to ruin it. No, I don't think that's a thing.
It's not a possibility.
No, it's not a possibility. At worst, it's a cash grab that you shit on. It's terrible, whatever. It's never going to be like, wow, I like Happy Gilmore less because Happy Gilmore 2 is bad. That would never happen.
Yeah.
It is directed by Kyle Nowicek, who I'm trying to remember. He also did Game Over Man and Workaholics, so he's one of the Workaholics guys. But then, more relevantly, I guess, did Murder Mystery, which is one of the better Adam Sandler movies.
Yeah, for sure.
From the last few years. Adam Sandler was one of the writers, along with Tim Laherly. That's a tough one to pronounce. And then the cast, it's a lot of the original guys. In addition to that, it is Benny Safdie, who plays, like, I guess, the main antagonist in this, Frank Manatee. And then just a never-ending list of cameo performers.
Yeah.
Never-ending. Truly never-ending. Like, I'm not even going to begin to try and list them. It's just not worth it.
There's almost more cameo. I bet there are more cameo roles in this movie than there are just like even
actual actors.
Normal roles.
Yeah. Then let me like physically. Yeah. I think I would agree. So Happy Gilmore 2 revisit his golf career after his win at the Tour Championship. That's the entire synopsis from IMDb. You could do better than that. Basically, it's Happy Gilmore is a washed up golfer, and now there's a new league. There's a Live Tour, basically, but more like extreme Live Tour, I guess. And they threaten golf, so they bring Happy back. They battle it out. So Happy Gilmore 2, the big thing I was dreading about this, again, is just when you watch the trailer for it, there is just an obscene volume of cameos where when I see that in a movie, it reads to me like, we don't have anything really to give you. We don't have substance to give you. Here's just like some empty carbs or whatever. Here's something that looks like, here's something that vaguely resembles food for you to eat. And like that to me, I hate and I think it's lazy, and I truly detest it. And I think in the golf world too, it's very, I really don't like that at all. So I was not looking forward to seeing this.
Yep.
And here's what I'll say, and I'm going to preface it by saying that I think my experience might be tainted a little bit because I watched it. I actually watched it.
I think you watched this movie in quite possibly the perfect environment to watch this movie.
Ideal environment. I watched it at 10 a.m. hungover with all of my friends at my bachelor party in a big fucking living room, all watching it on a big TV. And tell you what, we were fucking laughed our ass off at a lot of lines where I could tell I was laughing. I'm like, I'm laughing more because everyone's laughing than I am at the actual efficiency or goodness of this joke. But there were also a lot of jokes which I think really played. It very much embraces playing the hits where it's like, yes, we're going to do the stuff that we know made you laugh in the original 90s Sandler run. And those, I think, are good. I also think there's modern day jokes which work well. And the cameos, as bad as some of them are, some of them are really good, and they play them smart, and they don't overload it. Like, for example, Zalatoris. I think great cameo. I think they did a great job with that. That was a perfect fit. Yeah, I think he actually acted pretty well, too.
I think he was the strongest of them all.
But then, like, the other guys where it's just, like, you're there for one punchline, like Scheffler, that was fine, whatever.
Yes. Rory never let him speak into a microphone ever.
Yeah, that was tough.
Him and Spieth and Xander Schauffele.
Yeah, they had nothing to give you. And then some of them, I think, were actively bad, like the Eminem one. I don't think it was good at all.
No, which was upsetting because he has one of my favorite in cameos of all time in Funny People.
Yeah. So I think overall, it gives you exactly what you kind of hope out of a late sequel like this. Like, cash grab, yeah, for sure. Like, no question about it. Netflix just trying to get a little bit of, like, tax evasion going on, whatever the fuck they do over there. But I think the substance you get out of this, you get a little bit of heart, the family story. Hey, I gotta make money for my family, all those fun things. And then that stuff's there, no question about it. But everything else, like, joke-wise works. The old style and the new style jokes work. The production value is pretty much there. Third act goes off the rails quick, but I mostly enjoyed it.
This is hard to call a movie.
Okay, I'd agree with that immediately.
Hard to call a movie, which is why I like have a tough time even criticizing it at any point. Because I think Netflix really, this was made to be watched in the way you watched it. I think this was made to be thrown on the background with your friends while you're drinking a little bit, maybe hungover a little bit, just in the mood to laugh. And you just kind of sit there and have it on the background. You're like, hey, look, it's Travis Kelce. It's Bad Bunny. Like, Margaret Qualley just did the splits. Oh, is that Eric Andre? Like, it's kind of
Slim Peterson.
Yeah, like it's kind of set up for you to just kind of point at the screen and be like, oh, look. So in that respect, I'll have a tough time really shitting. Like, I can't sit here and be like, oh, it looks bad. Like,
they were trying to do something different. Not really.
Like, no. Like, the first one shot on film, but it's still kind of – it's an SNL skit extended. Really, really good one. My favorite of the Happy Madisons, but it wasn't doing anything groundbreaking. I have a tough time criticizing this. I will say I love that he brought his family in.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. Like, it not only is, like, subtextually, like, enjoyable as someone who, like, loves Sandler as, like, the family man that he is, and, like, seeing his family on screen made me really happy. But I think inside the story, it also, like, positioning, like, the parts where it's positioned as a family story and he's, like, a sweet dad are the best parts of the movie for me, outside of the jokes, which there are some that really killed me.
The recurring alcohol bit got me a lot.
The recurring alcohol bit, I was like, are they going to keep this going? And then once they really kept it going was where, like, that's what really gets me.
There's, like, a weird range, right? Where, like, if they stopped at the wrong point, it would be like, oh, you took too long. But then they kept going.
Yes. Once he gets into the one that killed me is he's in the bathroom in his phone.
His phone.
I'm like, this is so stupid. Some of the stuff doesn't work. But I just, like, this is not a real movie. This is not a real movie, is what I should say. Does not take away from the original for me. Will I ever rewatch it? No. Will I, like, shit on someone for thinking this is funny? Not at all. It's a dumb comedy. Really dumb. Really, really dumb. But shit, when a guy breathes into a breathalyzer and it says fart identified,
it's going to get you.
It's going to get me.
I think of all the cameo actors, John Daly was actually, he was surprisingly good.
Very good. There's a reason why they kept him in, like, the longest. All the kids, which MJF, good.
Yeah. There's just like a fucking,
comedy police are coming.
Just fucking rolling by us right now.
MJF, good. The kid from Snack Shack, good. Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny, really good, I thought.
Strong actor.
really good. Travis Kelce, terrible.
When, you know what made it kind of not pissed me off, but when that fucking dude from SNL showed up as his cousin, I'm like, oh.
Which one?
This fucking character again. It's Bad Bunny's cousin or whatever in it.
Oh, Marcelo.
Yeah, it's like, oh, here's Marcelo again. Everyone thinks he's the funniest thing in the world. And like, that to me is like the most, he's such a, I'm so dumb with that.
I turned to my girlfriend that. I was like, yeah, that was a, Lauren picked up the phone and called Adam and said, can you please put an SNL cast member in this movie? Please.
Yeah,
please put a current SNL cast member in this movie. And that was clearly like, get out on the driving range and they'll hit the balls at you.
Mm-hmm. He's like, all right, man, we get it.
So dumb. I didn't like, someone threw this out and I was going through Instagram comment sections because I'm depraved. Because there was like a full post shitting on Benny Safdie's character. There's been a lot of people who are like really upset about Benny Safdie's character. Mm-hmm. It's not that deep. Will Ferrell in that spot could have taken this movie to a different level.
That was a
Will Ferrell role if I've ever seen.
He's basically Mugatu, more or less.
It is a Will Ferrell role, and I like Benny Safdie. I like the movies he makes. I typically like him as an actor, but horribly miscast here. I get the thing they're doing, and I think it's really cool that like they have like LIV golfers even in there, like shitting, like very clearly shitting on LIV golf.
Yes.
This is 100%, like they don't even try to hide it. They call it Maxi League,
yeah.
Like it is so clearly targeting LIV golf. But that whole storyline kind of, not even storyline, just like the whole setup of it, I don't think really lands at all.
Yeah.
Like it just goes a little too over the top, and then the surgery, I don't like that people can get the surgery.
Yeah.
And just hit it. Like I like that Happy was like the only guy who could hit it that far. That was fun. That's what made him golfing so much like
I wonder when Haley Joel Osment finished filming.
He's the best part. He's really good in the movie.
He had some shit going on. Like right after this movie busted rap filming. You remember that?
Is this when he was really drunk?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean not great. He just said some pretty offensive things, right? He didn't do anything criminal.
Not that I know of. Okay. I don't want to care.
Because I do think he didn't get mega canceled. I think people are still like, it's the kid from Six Sense.
You know what else I liked? I liked Slim Peterson. I thought that was just a stupid, funny joke.
Yeah.
Just like that, the Huel from Breaking Bad, the actor's name. Yes. That was funny. Which I think it also was good. The whole Netflix crew, and Eric Andre and Mark Qualley being on that golf course. The other guy's the SNL guy. I don't know.
The digital shorts guy.
Yeah. They had him. Vern Lundquist, I thought was pretty good.
Yeah.
He's funny. They had like one really good line in that. I forget what it was.
Was that Peyton Manning in there to the right of him at one point?
I forget. I don't think so.
And Post Malone.
Post Malone was whatever to me.
Skinny Post.
That was like, Post Malone was one of the worst ones where I'm just like, you just had him in there not to even make a joke, just to like be like, that's Post Malone.
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
That I didn't like. Most of the other ones, I think
I'll also say this, Christopher McDonald, the shooter. Many of you know him as Shooter. Yeah, man, he still got it. He's very clear. I get why he's held onto this role for so long. Like he fits it like a glove. It was like he didn't miss a beat.
Yeah, like literally, like picked right back up where he left off. I also like the old golfers that were funny in that.
Mm-hmm.
During that whole sequence in the
yes,
club.
Oh yes, yes. Yeah. Having Jack Nicklaus, that was a really good pun.
Yes,
when he was like, I need a half lemonade, half iced tea, and then he's like, so in Arnold Palmer, he goes, Jack Nicklaus.
I get that a lot, or something like that. He was good, and then when they cut back to him on the TV later, they're all asleep, not even watching. That was good. I think most of the other ones, I'm trying to think of any of their cameos that were crazy.
I mean, it's like just
Kelce was whatever to me. Like that was a tougher one.
I just hate his hair right now. I hate that.
He just shaved it for a training camp. If that makes you feel better.
Yeah, he's one of those white guys that needs a buzz cut.
John Lovett's instant laugh the second he showed up and said one word. He pronounced one thing funny and immediately made me laugh.
Steve Buscemi just being the next door neighbor.
Yeah,
for no reason.
Dan Patrick saw it. Stephen A. Smith said something really funny, but I forget what it was.
Oh, yeah. He was just like, this guy made a deal with the devil. He should be in hell.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. He should be like, sent to hell and fight demons in the afterlife. Like, it was a funny, like, one step further. Chris Berman. I don't remember Chris Berman being in it. Did I miss him? Oh, that sucks. I think like, you know what they could have done better, too? Like, the Maxi League golfers, they could have been, like, the eight ball, whatever.
What the fuck
whatever.
Were they? They were like, I don't even know.
Like American Gladiators or something?
I didn't really get that. Like that the whole part, I didn't really, it just didn't land.
It mismatched where I think they had, like, it was, like, I think that the Haley Joel Osment character, they all should have been like him, like a schlub.
Yeah.
Instead it was like all these, like, super freak American Gladiators.
Mm-hmm.
That I didn't totally understand. I'm trying to think of anything. Oh yeah, Paige Brannick showed up for 5 seconds.
What's his name? Fuck, why am I forgetting his name? He's the number one golfer in the world. So the Scottie Scheffler going to jail joke was also really good.
Yeah, I was waiting for it. I was like waiting because they sort of did that for every one of the golfers. A little bit, they gave him a little something, like the tit man tits thing.
Yes,
it was funny, and I was like, when are they gonna? They gotta get him a something. When is it?
Yeah,
and they hit him. They got him good. Sean Avery was in this, and Chris Chelios. Got some hockey players here. That's cool. Kelsey Plum, that was an immediate, because she's just been such an asshole lately. Immediate turn off.
That was another one where it's like she doesn't even have a joke. Like she just, there. Is that Kelsey Plum?
They go, like, oh, yeah, I guess that's Kelsey Plum, sure. He also saw, he put, what's his name? The kid, the actor that passed away that played his son in Grown Ups.
Yeah, he put her in the.
Put him in a little thing. Yeah,
yeah, that was
that
great.
Was cool. And I'm trying to look through the rest of it.
It's the Sandman. I don't care. If he wants to spend Netflix's money doing this, I don't give a
The podcast shit, I think, could have went. Like, we're in like, oh, look, he's on Bad Friends. Oh, look, he's on Cameron's thing. That was where it was tough.
That was probably the worst. Yeah, I think that was my least favorite. Once we had Alex Earl commenting on Eminem playing the son of the Jackass guy, I was like, what's going on? Like, it just doesn't play. It just, the podcasters, I don't need to hear from. I love Andrew Santino and Bobby Lee.
Me too.
Good Lord, we do not need to. That also is like, how many people are going to even know who the fuck that is?
I know.
Even Alex Earl, like, who? I know she's huge for like people in their 20s, young 20s, but this is a franchise. This is a movie that came out 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are going to be mainly 50-year-old men are going to be watching this movie. They are not going to know.
They're going to think that they're made up for the movie. Like, this is like a made up show for the movie.
They won't know who Bad Bunny is, but.
Oh, no chance.
I mean, at least Bad Bunny was great.
Yeah.
He really made me laugh.
It was very funny. The happy place where it was like the updated Happy Place was very funny. That got me too.
Where he's just like, he's just shitting, scrolling his phone.
Watching the squirrel go around in circles, laughing like insanely. That was fucking funny. Like low cholesterol.
Yes. Like you have low cholesterol.
Yeah. That was very good. There were a lot of beats like that where it's like, that's the humor I love out of something like this. I still wish, like, if I could, again, I'd say majority of the cameos, maybe a little less, maybe like 50-50, were like good to passable. I still think I'd rather rip those all out and it be.
Yeah. I mean, the first one doesn't have like any cameos from any of the.
It's like Bob Barker and.
Bob Barker.
Like, some golfers, I guess, like you're here and there, but like, yeah, I think that could have done without it, and maybe even just more of his family members. I don't care.
Yeah, honestly, like, I think his youngest daughter is actually she had that one movie last summer, and I thought she was pretty solid. Honestly,
bar mitzvah one, or
yes, you're so not invited to my
bar mitzvah. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it. Those are like Nepo babies that I will ride for forever. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
Like them as like a family unit production movie. It's so weird to think about this way because he's like a multi-millionaire and all that stuff. But like, to me, he's almost like a mom and pop shop at himself. Where I'm like, I want to go support Adam Sandler, even though he's working for Netflix, all these things. Like, I want to go support his family.
Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I know Adam Sandler is like richer than God, but if you told me like, oh yeah, he only keeps like $150,000 a year. Like, like everything else is going out the window to friends and family. Like, I'd be like, yeah, I believe that.
Checks out. But yeah, that's Happy Gilmore. I think if I were to put it on a scale, it's tough. Like Gooch was just saying or earlier saying, like, it's not.
It's really just not a movie. It's not a movie. I don't know. Like,
I'd put it, you know what, honestly, I put it at a smooth 50. I think that's a 50 out of 100 movie, only because it's not trying to be anything crazy.
Yeah.
It's also not failing really at a lot of things. Like, it's exactly, I think, what it is attempting to be. Which is, let's throw some key jangling in the cameos and all that shit, sure. But then the gives you the jokes that I didn't think that they were capable of really doing anymore. Like, that sort of older 90s nostalgic humor. I'm like, I don't know how well you can do that, which is, thankfully, we saw a little bit different in Naked Gun. But, like, it hits. It did well.
Yeah. No. I said, if you like this, people are like losing their minds on Twitter over this. Like,
I know.
Like, apparently, you can't not like the movie, or you can't like the movie. It's like, this is Happy Gilmore 2. We do not need to have a discussion.
There's nothing.
We do not need to like lose our minds over this.
No.
Save your energy for Avatar 3
or Eddington.
Or Eddington. Yes. Go see Eddington. Yeah.
So yeah. Sure.
I'd rather Netflix make stuff like this than like try to actually make Electric State or like shit like God, that. Yeah. Like, this is much more bearable. Like,
put $500 million in Sandler's account than give it to the Russos.
Like, make these and then the occasional Roma. Like, whatever. Who gives a fuck?
All right, so that's Clappy Gilmore 2. In honor of Happy Gilmore 2, we're going to be doing a combined ranking of some late sequels. Again, the kind of thought process behind it is, I don't want to make it like, again, T2 to T1 level of gap. And also I didn't want it to be like really, I don't think any of these, as far as I know of, are the third movies in any franchise. Just like they kind of came back to a movie later. Let's say like, I think all these are at least 10
decade?
Years.
Probably yeah, more. I think decade would be like the... I think
all these are at minimum 10 years. I'll say that. And I think most of them are at least a little bit more than that. So here, let me see if I can pull up our full list. We have
you're saying it has to be direct too.
A direct sequel, yeah. It can't be okay. like a reboot. It can't be like Mad Max.
Okay, you know I mean? So that would have been like... See, that would have been like... Yes, number one for me.
If you recast the main character, I don't think you're no longer a sequel. Well, if you are forced to recast, like you aren't forced to, you just had to do it. So here's the list that I came up with. It is Dr. Sleep, which is obviously a sequel to The Shining, Tron Legacy from Tron, Blade Runner 2049 from Blade Runner, Escape from Los Angeles from Escape from New York, The Color of Money from The Hustler, which is going to be a low-key, I think, pretty high fucking up one for this, T2 Trainspotting, Top Gun Maverick, Split, which is a sequel to Unbreakable, Blues Brothers 2000, The Incredibles 2, Wall Street Money Never Sleeps, Zoolander 2, Mary Poppins Returns, Dumb and Dumber 2, Space Jam A New Legacy, Beetlejuice, Avatar The Way of Water, Independence Day Resurgence, Borat 2, and Jumanji, which I almost didn't include in this because I thought it was a separate reimagining, but Cooch proved me wrong on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's start out. Well, we're going to start top to bottom, right?
Yeah. Let's start with 10.
Okay. So 10. Or
each have a veto.
Yeah. We each have a veto. Let's do the top 10. I was just looking at this. I don't even think we should get through the 20. Although.
Oh, yeah. Let's do top 10. Yeah. No.
So let's wipe that away. So the number 10. Best movie out of all this, or should we be going reverse? Would it make more sense to go reverse? Like, how do I know what the 10th best?
That's the joy of it.
Yeah, I guess
you don't know what's going to end up at the top.
True, I guess so. So you can go first. What do you think the 10th best?
The 10th best?
Yeah.
I should have put these on a list.
Yeah, we got them all right here.
10th best. You know what? It's right there, and I would put it there. I think The Incredibles 2. Which is a little upsetting, because I will say I did get very excited for this movie. The Incredibles, which I rewatched last week, just holds up so well. It's almost perfect, if not perfect. Incredibles 2 is very good, not as good as the original. But it was nice seeing the family back on screen. Like, there's something to that Silver Age comic look, and Fantastic Four tapped into it as well. That is just so visually appealing, and I love the voice acting work across the board in the Incredibles movies. Like, really love it. Something I didn't know, too. Did you know Edna Mode is voiced by Brad Bird?
Is she? I thought that was an actress.
No, apparently, like, he brought in, like, a bunch of different actresses to nail the voice, and he was like, none of you are doing it right. I will just do it myself.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, voice acting great across the board. Really love the Incredibles. If you don't like the Incredibles, what are we doing?
I think this is kind of... Because right now we kind of want like averages to good. So I'm stuck between two. I think I'll do Split. I think Split is like right on that range too, where it's kind of, it's weird too, because it's not like a sequel where you don't know it's a sequel until
the last
5 minutes.
Last shot.
Yeah. But Split, I think, is a good movie. McAvoy out of his goddamn mind. Young Anya Taylor-Joy, incredible. Who's the other actress? Who am I missing? I
can't remember.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was anyone who's been...
Blown up, yeah. But that's a movie where I watched it. I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. This is really good. It's really good. Really entertained. And then at the end of it, I'm like, holy shit, this is connected to a different movie from M. Night, which I also like.
Yeah.
It's probably like the one of the few... Haley Lou Richardson. Fuck, man.
Oh, this one we know. Really?
Yeah, never mind. But yeah, the... what do you call it? When it reverses back and gets back to connected to Unbreakable. I loved it. I liked it. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that.
No, I really like Split. Like you said, James McAvoy out of his fucking mind acting in that movie.
Haven't really seen that since. What was that movie he just did recently with Mackenzie Grace and all them, where you played like the...
Oh, the American remake of Speak No Evil.
Speak No Evil, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's just fantastic.
Yeah.
He's so good. I can't wait to see... He'll be in Doomsday for sure, right?
Yeah.
Have to imagine.
Yeah.
Next up. I'll go, and I don't love this movie. I actually have it below Split, but I think it slots here. Dr. Sleep.
That was actually going to be my next if I had this pick.
Mike Flanagan has his shooters. I get it. He does have something to him. He's not my favorite, but Ewan McGregor is really, really good in this movie, mm-hmm. and even better is Rebecca Ferguson, who's fucking terrifying. Like the scene where the Jacob Tremblay murder scene, is like a crazy thing to put in the movie.
It's
like,
never would have expected that.
Would have expected it. And it's like one of those things where it's almost impossible to do it right. Because you're following up what is, in my opinion, like the greatest horror movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes out serviceable and very enjoyable. And like I said, Flanagan, I get why he has his fandom.
So I like Dr. Sleep. And again, that's right where I would have had it. I think next I'll do Tron Legacy.
Okay.
I think I like Tron Legacy quite a bit. And I'm not like a shooter for Tron at all. I don't really like the original Tron. And it's not really the movie's fault. It's just like at that time, revolutionary effects and all that stuff. Now it's like super abrasive to look at. But the remake I thought was excellent. Really well done. Acting across the board is great. And of course, the funk soundtrack, out of this fucking world. Out of this fucking world. And it's one where I was helped by the fact that I had no expectations to, because I didn't love the original, but I was like, holy shit, how is this that good? Like, why am I enjoying this much? And great legacy work too for Bridges too, as well. So really like Tron Legacy.
Yeah, I mean, it's Joseph Kaczynski.
It is. There's just
like
ones.
I mean, and it has that kineticism that he's like just kind of cemented himself with here lately. Yeah, and Jeff Bridges, just great.
I mean, really good.
The CGI also, I watched it, I think I rewatched it last year or 2 years ago. It holds up. There's like some stuff in there that like they do the de-aging on Jeff Bridges where it's like the early, that movie came out in what, 2013, 14?
Yeah, it was like the early tech on that.
Yeah, the early, and it's like kind of shows, but they don't over rely on it too much, so it doesn't become too much of a problem. But Tron Legacy, the Tron franchise is, it's fun. I just like the colors and like just, like you said, the soundtrack, the techno of it all.
Just a fun movie.
Very fun. Okay, next up, I'll go with, you know, I'll go T2.
Trainspotting?
I would probably put it higher, but I think you would push back on it.
I would push back on that for sure.
Yes. T2 is like, what's that movie? Matrix Resurrections had a lot of the same things to say, where it's kind of
not a great comp.
Shitty. It's shitting on the idea of a legacy sequel while being a legacy sequel. And that's, T2 is just a complete, like, fuck your nostalgia kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking gorgeous. I think that really gets undersold on how good that movie looks. Danny Boyle is just a wizard. Really sad. I mean, the first one's really sad. This one might be sadder. but I really, really like it. And I just did a rewatch of it. Big, big fan.
All right. I basically have my last five locked up, I think. And that would mean, so I know who I want my top four, basically, right? So I think I'm stuck between two late-stage remakes of kids' movies in my head, because I don't want to give too much room to anything else. And if you veto one, it's going to be the other. And I wouldn't mind if the other one gets knocked out, but it's just it's kind of a function of how we've put these up so far. So I like Mary Poppins Returns more than I like Beetlejuice. So I'll go with Mary Poppins Returns on this, with the one exception of that fucking BMX scene with Lin-Manuel Miranda. Everything else about it is super charming, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I would use my veto here, but knowing that the other option you're going for is Beetlejuice, then I have to stick with this.
The top four right now needs to be the top four to me. Like, the top four to me is so locked in, and I can't. And all these are, there's so many bad movies on here. Like, so many bad movies on this list that I can't be anything else for the top four. So I like Mary Poppins. Like, the Lin-Manuel stuff, the songs, he wrote it, if I remember right.
Yeah, he did. I think that was his like first one.
All that stuff, super pleasant. His character.
Second, he did Moana first.
Yeah. All of his, the stuff that he does kind of sucks because he's not really a good singer, but like the stuff that he writes, all great. And I think that Emily Blunt, super charming, steps right into a role, which is, and this is like, out of all these, probably the longest gap between the two, the direct movie and the direct sequel. It's like 50 years.
Yeah, has to be.
Yeah. So a long time, she steps right into a role that was like a legendary children's role with complete ease, fun, entertaining, mostly goofy, good kids movie. So I'll put it up there.
Yeah, I like the soundtrack too.
Yeah, good soundtrack.
Okay, next up, I'll go The Color of Money, which you might be listening to me like, The Color of Money is a late stage sequel. It is, to The Hustler, which is kind of a fun little thing we've talked about before. Need to complete the trilogy. But Scorsese's Paycheck movie comes out just looking better than most directors' best. Really cool. I mean, inventing a new way to shoot a sport that's never been shot before. And then the real highlight, of course, is just Newman.
It's two of the best ever.
And then a young Tom Cruise who's just like a fucking firecracker on screen, yeah. As Vince. Just a great movie. I really love it.
Two of the best to ever do it. Just on screen battling it out.
I can't imagine what that set was like. Tom must have annoyed the fuck out of Paul.
I imagine he's grilling him with crush.
Yes, like every I can't day. Imagine.
What was this like? What was this like? How'd you do this? Yeah. So that means I'm backed into the corner where I need to put Avatar Way of Water at number three here, without a doubt. Because the other two movies need to be one and two. Like, there is no question in my mind. It's just a matter of what order. But Avatar, it's not the shit on Avatar Way of Water either. Like, it's to me better than, you know, Tron or Doctor Sleep or Split or most of these movies. I enjoy it a lot. Like, we've been talking about it a lot again today just because Robbie's been on the warpath on Avatar lately. Mm-hmm. I mean, his movie's now, what, two years old?
Yep.
I guess. It's better than, CGI-wise, like, better than almost anything you're ever going to see on screen, like, ever.
I think probably better than anything that's come out since.
And the first Avatar is probably better than most of everything you'll ever going to see, even make some of which being made now.
Yes.
So I think it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's very simple, accessible, story-wise. Like, we talked about that as well earlier. Like, that's why it's such a worldwide grossing thing. Mm-hmm. It's such a universal story, like, universal language, whatever. And that all works. I think the acting, for the most part, especially from Zoe Saldana, like,
yes,
that's a tough, like, mocap acting is not easy, and she is so, like, she emotes a lot. She gets a lot through the screen through a mocap performance, and I'm very impressed by that always.
I also thought Worthington was a lot better in the sequel than he is in the original. And Quaritch is a villain. Yeah, I think the second one is, like, I really, really like the first one, but the second one I love. Like, I think it's a huge step up. Yeah. It's great. I don't like the haters of this movie.
I'm going to rewatch
these movies.
Tonight.
I think they are very kind movies. Next one. This is where it gets tough because there's two movies at the top of the board, which are very clearly
Switch
one
order.
And two. One is a better movie. One is, I think, a better sequel, if that makes sense.
I think they're both better than their originals. Here's the thing, right? I think both of these movies are superior to their original movies, but one of them is wildly better than its original.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends on how you want to grade it. Which one of these is a better movie, or which one of these is a better late stage sequel?
I'm going to keep the better movie at the top. I'm going to stick true to my guns, and I'll go number two, Top Gun Maverick.
I like that.
Top Gun Maverick is kind of just like, it's still, we're 3 or 4 years removed from it, and it still almost doesn't make sense in my head how good it turned out. Like,
excellent.
It just turned out like, you really could not have scripted it better. Not only did it turn out perfectly, people showed up for it. It really did save. I mean, it saved the theater industry domestically. Like, it mm-hmm. really did. And it's so great that it was something like this that's so well made and well cared for. Like, you can tell they did not want to do this until they got it right, and it came out perfectly. I just got the 4K a few weeks ago. I still haven't opened it up, but it's, man.
It's fantastic.
Man, hot, nasty American speed.
It's so good. And some of the weird thing is, too, we were just kind of talking about this with Happy Gilmore. It's a big time play of the hits movie. It's like, we're going to give you all the major hits, pop beats from the original, but kind of like going to trim the fat a little bit, relationship stuff wise, which was a huge, when you go rewatch Top Gun, you really feel this. It is a huge hindrance on the original Top Gun. And they, like I mentioned before, there's between these two, one of them is wildly better than the original. It is Top Gun Maverick. It is
it's a lot better,
significantly better than the original.
The original's great, and it has like iconic moments. And I'd argue it has more iconic moments than the sequel. Like, there's just stuff with Val Kilmer that's just like Val Kilmer and Tom going at each other that you just can't recreate.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just, like you said, there's drags of that movie. There's long stretches with the romance subplot that mm-hmm. just fucking, oh my God, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And this one, it's just pure action. The cast is better. But it is. Like, mm-hmm. all these actors are just, I mean, fucking Glenn Powell, Monica Barbaro, Miles Teller. Like, these are all, like, big up-and-comers, if not A-list, like, on their way to it.
Dude, fucking, what's his name?
Lewis Pullman.
Lewis Pullman's like the 80th billed guy on this.
Yeah,
And now he's a major Marvel character.
Yeah, top to bottom, just an amazing, charismatic cast.
Yeah, and Jennifer Connelly.
Jennifer Connelly.
Still got it. Still got it.
On that sailboat, good lordy.
Still got the goods. But yeah, so that means that the number one is going to be Blade Runner 2049, which I think is a fair winner. I mean, you want to talk about... It's another one where, again, I think it's better than the original. That's no disrespect to Ridley Scott. I mean, because Blade Runner 1 is an iconic piece of mm-hmm. sci-fi movies in general, but just like, even now still holds up from effects wise, especially from that era. And you could say that about most Ridley Scott. Like, you could say about Alien too. Like, no one was doing that shit like him.
Yeah,
he just perfectly captures and builds out a world like nobody could do it in sci-fi at the time, other than maybe Star Wars, I guess. So beautiful. And then this one comes out and it does kind of the same thing. Almost makes like a benchmark in new world sci-fi building.
Mm-hmm.
Looks beautiful. Gorgeous, kind of like looks at sci-fi that you haven't really seen before, and really haven't seen since in other outside of Dune since. Gosling crushes it.
Yeah.
And what is not an easy, I know people might think like, hey, you're playing in like a robot in a way, it's got to be easy. It's not really. Like,
oh no, because his robot performance is like towing the line of, do I have a soul or not? Like,
yeah.
So he's like bouncing between like these human emotions and these robotic like tendencies. It's so, so good.
Mm-hmm. He's like effortlessly great. Even like we mentioned all the time, like Dave Bautista is insanely good in the opening sequence of it. Dust Machin shows up for 5 minutes, crushes
so
it.
Good.
Robin Wright, so good.
De Armas kind of blew up. De Armas
blew up. De Armas.
I mean, the Deacon's photography,
gorgeous. The Jared Leto. That's probably like the last good thing he's done.
Really,
and he was really fucking good in it.
Really good in it.
And
Mackenzie
then,
Davis.
Yeah, Mackenzie Davis. I almost forgot Mackenzie Davis. And also the Dutch actress who plays the main antagonist, Replicant, is also very good. And Harrison.
Yeah, I mean, Harrison shows up, yeah.
Harrison does. He shows up, pretty much does exactly what you want out of him. He doesn't do anything crazy extra, but like he's
a drunk old man. I mean, he's really good at doing that.
Dude, that whole scene where they go through Vegas, like, talk about gorgeous.
Yes,
dude.
And the Elvis hologram just popping up.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, I think that's a worthy winner. Some of the ones that we didn't talk about, Escape from Los Angeles, terrible movie. Escape from New York, all-time great one.
I was looking at it and I was like, yeah. That was like Incredibles too. I was like, no.
Bad movie. He surfs like a fucking tsunami in it or whatever. Terrible movie. The basketball scene is very funny though. We'll give it that. Blues Brothers 2000, one of the worst comedies maybe ever put to screen. Especially after Blues Brothers was so well regarded. And
my
beloved.
My dad took me to that because he was a big, you could tell it really hurt him. It really hurt him.
Wall Street and Money Never Sleeps. I'm not like some massive original Wall Street movie lover or anything like that. Yeah. The second one, it just stinks. There's nothing between those two in like Shia. Like,
yes.
Charlie Sheen is such a strange actor. And like I don't think he was ever a good actor. He was just always perfect in the things that he got cast in.
Yeah.
Like, he was great in, for example, Red Dawn. Like, he's the perfect character in Red Dawn for what he needs to be. But, like, this, Shia is just not the right, I don't think he was the right guy for that. Zoolander 2, not good.
No. Anchorman 2 also, I guess, would be in that bucket.
Oh, we should have put on there, yeah.
But wouldn't have made the list.
Oh, it's also, I don't think it's much time between this sequel, because I was, or no, I think it was 10 years at least.
I think it was 10 years. Maybe exactly 10.
Yeah, but that was a tough one too. Just both of those just kind of playing the hits. Dumb and Dumber 2, just actually bad though.
Yeah,
very
bad.
Terrible movie.
Space Jam might be the worst one on here. To be honest, Space Jam 2 might be the worst movie on here.
Space Jam New Legacy was so, it was just an ad.
It was just an ad.
A 20-minute
like,
ad.
That's actually disgusting that they made that. Like, that movie is fucking gross to like think back on.
Beetlejuice, like we mentioned before. I like Beetlejuice.
Yeah, very fun.
I think we kind of got screwed by how we went through these. If I could bump off one, I might. But Beetlejuice is totally fine.
Yeah, like, it's good.
That's like, I think that's like your floor if you're shooting for a late-stage reboot.
I think we said that in the review. Yeah. We're like, I think this is right at the level of where you need to aim for.
Yes, like, I think we said that word for word. Like, this is the
anything whatever. Worse, it's like, this is a failed sequel. Anything better, it's like, all right. You got it.
Yeah. Independence Day Resurgence, dog shit.
Bad.
Terrible movie.
Borat 2, pretty good.
Borat 2, good. It does not age.
Yeah.
Well, at all.
It's too like tied up in the politics of, what, 2019?
Yeah. COVID.
COVID, yes.
COVID stuff. It was 21, I think. And then like the one big scene that they kept... I'll give it the credit. Gave us Maria Bakalova, who I think is going to be a great actress in the future.
Yeah.
But the big thing they hyped up was like, hey, this Giuliani scene is going to be crazy.
Yeah.
It really wasn't.
No.
Like, I really thought that was going to be something
crazy.
They're
like, he's going down.
Yeah.
It's like,
not really.
He's 85 years old. I think he's going to do that himself.
Yeah. And then Jumanji.
The first one's not bad.
First one's good. Well, the original, I like the original a bit.
Yeah, the original is, I think, a lot better.
Yeah, second one, I think that was another, like, one of the most, like, passable maybe movies ever. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like...
Did it make a billion? That feels like one of those sneaky, it made $1 billion.
Was it 2017 probably, right? 2018? Just Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. Let's see. 962 million, quite close.
Wow.
On the global box office. Music by Henry Jackman, not to be confused. And yeah, that was one where I couldn't really tell you many scenes from that movie at all.
Nope.
I just remember watching it and being like, that's totally fine. I'm not disappointed, really. I'm also not enthused. I'm not going to recommend this to anyone.
Is that where I Fart Out My Heart came from?
I think so.
Kevin Hart, I Shart Out My Heart.
Yeah.
Or something.
I'll take your word on it, honestly.
Or Jack Black was a woman trapped inside of Jack Black's body in that movie.
I think that was the second one they flipped him.
That's what it was.
And the second one they reskinned into the wrong avatars or whatever.
I would say I'll go find out, but I'm not rewatching those movies ever again.
Not rewatching that ever again. But yeah, so that's our final ranking, which is number 10, The Incredibles 2, then Split, Dr. Sleep, Tron Legacy, T2 Trainspotting, Mary Poppins Returns, The Color of Money, Avatar The Way of Water, Top Gun Maverick, and Blade Runner 2049. What do we have next week, you ask? And I will tell you the same thing I tell you every week, which is that I always forget to look up which movies are coming up this next week.
Naked Gun.
Right? It should be, right? Yeah, that comes out August 1st, I want to say. Let's double check just to be sure. July into August, we have Together coming out this weekend.
Yeah, that looks terrifying.
Also, Oh Hi, which I think you saw already, right?
Yeah, I saw last night. It's fun, enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing groundbreaking. Good time.
War of the Worlds.
That's the Ice Cube.
Is it an animated or something?
No, it's like told from a computer screen. It's weird.
Okay. The Bad Guys 2, which I don't think will be for us. And then The Naked Gun on the 1st. She-Ride Shotgun, which I think that's the Taron Egerton crime movie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The Oxford Year, the Trouble Man, which is those are.
So Naked Gun. We'll talk some Naked Gun.
Those are Gun Range guys. Naked Gun will be.
I surprisingly have a lot to say about The Naked Gun.
Yeah, and again,
positive things.
We may have seen this 3 times now by the time we come back to you guys next week. So stay tuned for next Tuesday again when we'll be back with a new movie.